Morning, everyone. Here. The Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners will now come to order on September 15th, 2023, at 9:11. My name is Adalessa Meek. I'm a licensed professional counselor, a licensed independent substance abuse counselor, and I'm the board's chairperson. Is this coming okay? Okay. I would like to ask everyone to please put your phones on silent or turn them off. For your convenience, we have vending machines, and those are right outside the room, and the restrooms are across the elevators. A couple of reminders. This is an open meeting. It is being recorded, and the audio from the meeting will be posted on the board's website. If you're speaking into the microphone, get really, really close today. And please be sure to speak slowly, clearly into it. In order to protect privacy, please refer to clients or former clients, including if any of them are complainants, by initials only. A reminder that we have a civility policy and that prohibits disorderly conduct, and those in violation will be removed from the meeting. I would like to now invite my fellow board members and staff to introduce themselves, starting with Mr. Charles.
Charles, public member.
Antoine Trotter, public member.
Mark Shen, professional member.
Davis. Holly Knapp, professional member.
Mary Coonrod, public member.
Megan Kramer, public member.
Karen Yabu, deputy director.
Jared Carver, investigations manager.
Toby Zavala, executive director.
Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General, representing the board this morning.
Madam Chair, if we could go back and do the roll call.
Okay, can we do roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey.
Present.
Robert Charles.
Here.
Mary Coonrod.
Here.
Cedric Davis.
Morning again.
Patricia Dobratz. Lynette Hennigan. Holly Knapp.
Present.
Megan Kramer.
Here.
Adalisa Meek.
Here.
Diane Palacios, Mark Shen.
Here.
Antoine Trotter.
Present.
Thank you. So now we move to agenda number 3 minutes. And we have to table items A through G. And do I have a motion to approve the minutes H from August 11, 2023, general meeting?
And Madam Chair, can we have that reflect? It's because we do not have quorum.
So those items are put on table because we do not have quorum for each one of those. So I have a motion to approve August 11, 2023, general meeting minutes.
So move, Trotter.
And Madam Chair, Polly and Megan need to abstain from the August 11.
From August 11. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. We will now move to item number 4, consent agendas. Items on the consent agenda appear with a recommendation from board staff. Board members have reviewed all the materials and the recommendations, and we are prepared to vote on each matter as it appears on the agenda. Before doing so, I will call each matter to see if anyone is here who wishes to pull the matter. Pulling the matter means that you are a party to the matter. You do not agree with the recommendations and would like up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you wish to pull a matter, please raise your hand when I call it so that I know that you're here. Okay, agenda 4A, cases recommended for dismissal. We have Cochrane, Julie Gill, Felicia Marsh. Do I have a motion to dismiss items 1, 2, and 3?
So move, Trotter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 4D, cases recommended for acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. We have Elaine Winter. Do I have a motion for acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We move to item 4E, cases recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement. We have Chad Hawkins, Mishka Peck. Do I have a motion to open a complaint and accept of the proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement, 1 and 2?
Unrod, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We move to 4G, cases recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of a proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement. We have Selena Gravanda. Do I have a motion to open a complaint and accept of the proposed signed disciplinary consent agreement? Roll call, please.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you. We move to item 4I. Cases recommended for release from consent agreement. We have Zira Franks, Tracy Fredrickson, Ryan Hilton, Harry Marcy, Irving Nunez. Do I have a motion to release items 1 through 5 from consent agreement? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next on our agenda is item number 7, our review of complaints and disciplinary matters. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's review of disciplinary matters. They will be heard by us pursuant to the authority given in ARS 323281. Those licensees or applicants on today's agenda received by mail a board meeting notice which included a list of potential actions the board could take once we reach deliberations. This list is not exclusive, and there may be other options the board considers. Board members have reviewed all the materials submitted for each case. The board will first hear a summary of the case from board staff. Once staff is done, other interested parties, including the complainant, if applicable, and the professional, will be given the opportunity to address the board. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking do not take time repeating information the board has already received. You and your legal counsel, if applicable, will collectively be given the same amount of time the board staff takes to present the case, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Once the board has heard from parties, we will move into deliberation, and we ask that you do not interrupt, as it is our time to talk amongst ourselves. If it is necessary at any time to refer to a client or former client, please use initials only, including if they are complainants. So we're going to 7D, Jennifer Mullen. And is the complainant here? And you're the licensee? You're the licensee? Okay. And Ms. Stark? All right. Okay. So we're going to first hear from board staff summary.
Madam Chair, members of the board, there is a supplement that is being passed around that we received last night. What it is two certificates of CEU that appear to have been taken yesterday. One is for ethical considerations and best practice, and the other is beyond therapy, the basis of clinical documentation. That's being passed out for your review. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and go to the analysis. Is everybody hearing me out there? Yeah? Okay. So, I know that Chairperson mentioned we're having issues with our audio. This is a brand new system, but there's a sensitivity issue with them, and we need to make sure that they're being recorded. So we might look a little funny as we're eating our mics here. Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 323251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the following section of the ACA Code of Ethics, A10A, self-referral. From 919 to 922, licensee provided behavioral health services to client at agency. In 922, licensee went on maternity leave, but then later resigned in 1222 from agency. Prior to licensee going on maternity leave, she provided client her business card, which included her personal email address, and notified client not to contact licensee while she was on maternity leave through the end of 1222. On 1/2/23, client emailed licensee checking in on licensee's plan to return to agency. Licensee subsequently responded, informing client that she enjoyed staying home with her son and was seeing a handful of clients on a cash basis via telehealth if client wanted to engage in services. Client then emailed asking what licensee's fees were, in which licensee responded it was $100, but would be willing to work with client and her budget. Licensee subsequently agreed to start services with client in 2/23 for $75 per session. Licensee, in fact, conducted at least four telehealth sessions with client from 2/9/23 to 3/16/23. Despite licensee documenting in the first session that they discussed changes since client's last counseling with licensee, it does not clearly document where client previously received services from licensee, though. Even though licensee's discharge summary indicated client was a previous client at agency, nowhere in the clinical record does licensee document the rationale for taking client on at private practice and how there would not be any sort of conflict of interest based on their prior therapeutic relationship. Furthermore, licensee inappropriately offered services to private practice to client and initiated the idea of making self-referral, which is prohibited by the ACA Code of Ethics. Additionally, following a review of the records, ARS 3232516P, as it relates to the consent for treatment, treatment plan, and telepractice. From 1/4/23/3/16/23, licensee provided behavioral health services to client at private practice. At the onset of services, licensee had client sign intake forms and an informed consent, which failed to include the following minimum board requirements: the dated signature from an authorized representative, and the manner of identifying the client when using electronic communication that does not involve video. A 2/9/23 treatment plan for client failed to include the date the treatment plan will be reviewed. The progress note for client failed to include verification of the client's local emergency contacts. It's concerning that licensee's been licensed since 2016 and was not aware her clinical documentation did not meet requirements and fails to apply the board's minimum documentation standards to her records. Furthermore, in 2020 and in 2022, licensee submitted her LPC renewal application to the board, where she attested that she completed the board's statutes and regulations tutorial, which covers the board's rule regarding documentation minimum standards. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be a violation of ARS 3232516S, terminating behavioral health services to a client without making an appropriate referral. From 919 to 922, licensee treated client at agency for anxiety, depression, and trauma until licensee went on leave. From 1/4/23 to 16/23, licensee provided behavioral health services to client at private practice based on client's need for continued services. At the onset of services, the records do not reflect how long services with client will last. Furthermore, the 2/9/23 treatment plan listed to be determined as the estimated date of completion. Licensee conducted four sessions with client, and none of those progress notes indicate that licensee was working towards closing out client from services. Despite 3/16/23 being client's last session with licensee, a 4/15/23 discharge summary indicated client was being discharged as planned and that the client was doing well, able to manage her anxiety and set healthy boundaries. This discharge summary failed to identify whether client needed continued services or not, and none of the records indicate that the client was ready to be discharged. Furthermore, the discharge summary does not indicate that the licensee provided client resources or referrals for the continuity of care. During the investigative interview, licensee represented the following when going through the termination process with client. Licensee determined client identified challenges she overcame. They highlighted the changes client made and noticed in her behaviors and how she interacts with the outside world. No additional referrals were made because she did not need any. It is concerning that shortly after being notified of this board complaint and agency sending licensee a cease and desist, she terminated services with client. Furthermore, there is no corroborating information within the clinical record that indicates client met her goals and was ready for termination of services. Additionally, the treatment plan clearly lists the date of completion as to be determined. It appears licensee failed to provide any sort of resources for the continuity of care for client since there was no documentation that client did in fact meet all of their goals and no longer needed services. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Do any board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Okay, so the licensee has up to 5 minutes, 6 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the board. Trying to do the new microphone. Okay. So before I address each of the specific allegations, I want to provide some background and context about the situation and who Ms. Mullen is as a practitioner. Can everyone hear me? Is this on? Okay. Okay. Ms. Mullen had been working at the complainant agency for approximately 4 years when she found out she was expecting her first child. As soon as she announced to her employer that she was expecting in about March of 2022, she began to make arrangements for her anticipated maternity leave in September. By the time she was about to go on maternity leave, Ms. Mullen had successfully transitioned all of her clients to other clinicians at the agency. Even her employer, who's the one that filed this complaint, acknowledged how organized Ms. Mullen was and noted that she made a detailed spreadsheet to track the transition process of each of her clients. Most of the clients had been transitioned by the summer, but there were a few that she continued to see up until she was about to go out on leave. One particular client expressed concern about whether Ms. Mullen would return to the agency after her leave, which Ms. Mullen had every intention of doing at that time. However, although this client had been transferred to another provider at the agency, the client was insistent that she wanted to continue with Ms. Mullen to finish up the work that they had been doing when she returned from maternity leave. In an attempt to alleviate her concern, Ms. Mullen gave the client her contact information with strict instructions only to contact her if she had not heard from the agency about Ms. Mullen's return by the end of the year or the early of the following new year. Again, at that time, Ms. Mullen had every intention of returning to the agency, but also knew that her life was about to change dramatically, and she did not want to leave the client in a lurch if she ended up not returning as planned. In addition, she had ongoing concerns about the agency's communication with clients, so she wanted to ensure that the client was informed of the plans if they happened to change. At the time, around September of 2022, when this is all happening, Ms. Mullen's husband also lost his job, and she had received an opportunity to open a small private practice out of her home where she would service Colorado clients. This was intended to supplement her income from the agency when she returned after going out on leave. Ms. Mullen did end up resigning from the agency on December 15th of 2022 as she decided she wanted to stay home with her son. Again, she had decided around September to open a small private practice to service Colorado clients, because her husband had also happened to lose his job at that time. As Ms. Mullen anticipated, the agency did not inform the client of her change of plans, and Ms. Mullen received an email from the client in early January asking about her return as she had not heard anything from the agency. Now, with regard to the alleged violations, Ms. Mullen certainly acknowledges that there were things that she could have done better in the situation. She recognizes now that she should not have given the client her email, but her intention was never to solicit the client away from the agency or to self-refer to this private practice that, again, was intended at that time to service Colorado clients as a side source of income. She was attempting to address the possibility of the agency's lack of communication, which she now knows was not her responsibility as the client was fully transitioned to another provider in the agency. While her intentions were good, by not maintaining these stricter boundaries, she has obviously had to face significant consequences with this complaint. With regard to the deficiencies in the practice forms, as we have stated, Ms. Mullen had just had a baby. She had opened a private practice. She was getting used to a new EHR system. As soon as board staff provided comments about her forms during the investigative interview, we immediately updated them and provided what we believe are compliant versions to board staff, which should be included in the file. As to the allegation of improperly terminating the client, Ms. Mullen acknowledges that her charts do not accurately reflect the details of the client's termination plan. This was in part due to Ms. Mullen working through a new EHR system. For example, there were multiple calendar entries that contained Ms. Mullen's notes about the scheduling and the client's progress that Ms. Mullen assumed populated into the chart. But when the client canceled an appointment, which occurred on a few occasions, all of the data was erased and did not make it into the final chart. Again, this is not an excuse. Ms. Mullen knows it's her responsibility to go back and ensure that all the charts are complete and accurate. But again, this was a new system she had been working with for only a couple months, and there's been a learning curve that she's now working through. As Ms. Saval stated, Ms. Mullen completed some continuing education in both clinical documentation and ethical considerations. I will once again reiterate and close with the fact that Ms. Mullen is an extremely organized and conscientious practitioner. She was with the agency for 4 years without discipline or complaint. You are looking at a small snapshot of her practice when she was going through a major life transition, both personally and professionally. And I don't know if I've almost used up all my time, but wanted to just address a few things that she learned in her CE, and then, of course, she's available for questions the board members may have after. Thank you.
Go ahead. Is that time? Okay. You can summarize.
Okay. In the courses that I took yesterday, most important thing is make sure everything is documented. So even if I see it one time, making sure when the chart is completed that it's still in there. And then using an ethic model when some of these kind of tougher decisions come up, and consulting with supervisors or outside consultation for best ethical practices.
Okay, thank you. Do any board members have any questions for Ms. Mullen? I just have one quick one, clarifying. So was this client terminated? Because you mentioned something about there was some data that was not transferred.
Was the client terminated from me with NOAA or during my private practice?
During your private practice.
Yes. So okay. I believe in April the client had texted me that she was ready for termination, that she was doing really well. I had entered that documentation into her appointment note, and then I deleted her appointment from my calendar, and that's when I realized that all of the documentation attached to that appointment was deleted.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. So the board will now deliberate. We request that you do not interrupt us during this time. And this is Mr. Shins. Are you leading the discussion? No?
Madam Chair, I'm just, my memory, I'm trying to think about the report. I don't think we were aware of that text message. Is it possible that we get a copy of that text message that the client reached out?
Yes, and she did send it to me, and I did not send it to you, so that's my fault. But I have it. I can send it to you right now.
Okay, I think that would be important. I think that's part of the story.
So should we wait for that? Or?
Oh, I think you guys can go ahead and deliberate, but I okay. think it makes sense to see it, because I think that makes a little bit of a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So who's leading the case? I can lead it.
We can all just jump in.
We can all jump in. Okay. So we're going to wait for a second. Is that okay, Ms. Zavala, to wait for the email or the text?
It was mine last meeting. And I can still talk about it. I wasn't really prepared to do it again.
That's okay.
Lead it.
We're okay. Good. Okay. Yes.
Give me one second. I'm actually not prepared. Does anyone
no, that's okay.
to start the conversation?
Yeah. Dr. Bailey.
I mean, it does appear that we definitely have some documentation issues, which, you know, are acknowledged by even taking the continuing education around that. So I don't think we have any, probably any question about there was some documentation deficiencies. I am uncomfortable when we give clients, though, you know, our information. That solicitation of clients is just super tricky for multiple reasons. One is we don't want to put the client in a position where they feel they have to follow us. Now, with that said, I know clients like to stay with their therapist. I want that to be acknowledged. I recognize that, and it's very well. We just have to go through all the proper channels to make sure they have the referrals, and that way they make an informed choice on their own and the proper process. So I think there is some room to do that differently in the future, and that wasn't followed here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that text message that we're kind of waiting for probably speaks to whether she was closed appropriately or not, which would be, you know, to talk to the proper continuity of care.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the first two we could talk about if anybody feels differently about those two.
No, and I was just going to add, like, text messages sort of create a problem in and of themselves. They're hard to keep in a file and stuff like that. So I think, you know, that's probably part of the reason why we don't have it, because it's, you know, they don't easily end up in your documentation. So that's just another documentation issue.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And upon seeing the text message and all of that, I had even wondered prior to that, was this a documentation deficiency issue as opposed to a not actually following the follow-up for care for that member? So I think that does speak to that. And to me, it sounds like, you know, without having that in front of us, it probably was more of a documentation.
Madam Chair, members of the board, so I am in receipt of the email that Ms. Stark just sent me in regards to the text, and it does appear that on April 9th, the client did send the licensee an email letting her know that she was she received the reminder for their appointment, but wants to go ahead and cancel it. She's doing well, and so forth. And then there was an acknowledgement from the licensee. So, you know, based on that, I would be doing the F violation.
I agree. Thank you. Okay, do we have a motion? To fine for violation?
The difficult thing for me on this one is that it's not as egregious as some we've seen in the past, right? Where someone says, like, here's my information. I'm giving it to 20 clients. Please call me later. It's more of like a slip up, I'm going to call it. Of here's my card. It has my email address. I don't think Lysi was thinking, like, I want you to come back to me later. So that's where I struggle with the violation, is that is a self-referral occurred. It's just, it feels and looks a lot different than what we've seen in the past. So thoughts on that?
I would agree that it does not seem to be egregious or a pattern of behavior.
Yeah.
It seems like the intent was just want to make sure this one human is okay, and that was not carried out in the most appropriate way, but it does not seem to be the pattern. It does not seem to be terribly egregious. You know, I would agree.
It came from like a discomfort with termination and transition, and I feel like that's something we could address without finding this violation.
Okay. I mean, supportive of what you guys have said. Do we have a motion?
Are you going to say something?
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would be comfortable with NDCA with education.
I would agree, because I have an education requirement I would like to put out there.
So is that a motion, and is that a second?
So moved.
Ms. Zavala?
And that's perfectly fine what you're doing, but I think we probably should have more of a discussion of what the NDCA looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you're in agreement. We don't need an emotion on it yet until
okay.
we determine what education you want to
see. Recommendations?
So I wanted to throw out just training on the EHR. I think a lot of us go into using an EHR and then learn it on the fly, and then we find all these problems that come up.
and they end up being pretty significant to the client record. So I'm not sure what you're using, but I would want some formal training on from whatever that platform is, so that you're really well aware of how the platform works. Even with record retention, I mean, files should not be deleted in an EHR. That feels strange to hear that, because it feels like it's stored forever, even when we're trying to delete them after the requirement for the years required. So I would throw that out there, that I think we've got some documentation classes and whatnot that feel like appropriate, but I would like something on that platform, since that appeared to be part of the problem.
We recognize that each EHR is different.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Really aren't appropriate for use.
So are we thinking specific number of hours, or just some kind of proof that there was some training on the electronic health record? Because we wouldn't know.
I'd be good with that only because I do think they probably have some, it's probably going to be tutorials. I hope mm-hmm. the hearing mm-hmm. you do a good job of exhausting mm-hmm. whatever is available. I just think, at least going through the tutorial that the platform uses.
Right.
Maybe asking a couple questions, knowing where we had some failures might be helpful, so that we're super, aware of how to handle those situations. I know most of them, I've gone through them. Most of them have some significant tutorials, because they're trying to sell you on it. Mm-hmm. And so if we just go a little bit above and beyond and ask questions on really how to utilize and how it works, mm-hmm. then we'd be more versed on how to use the EHR that you're choosing. So I think that's good, but just an attestation that we've yeah. done X amount, whatever is offered, whatever she could find.
Right. So the attestation makes sense, because you're not going to get a certificate.
Ms. Arbal, you have a question?
Oh, there might be more. I didn't mean to trump anything else.
No. Okay. Fully agree. I just think that, back what Doc said, is that not all EHRs are created equal. Mm-hmm. And there are some really, really bad ones out there that may actually not have any tutorials. So I'm wondering if there's just a way to document that, some proof of training, whether it be reviewing a manual or something that shows that I spend some time learning this EHR. So.
Okay.
And I would want to memorialize the training that, she took, that she submitted, mostly to speak to sort of the, walking that ethical line. So I would like to put that in the NDC. The letters.
We accept the documentation or the continuing ed.
Yes, and then accept. Yes, and then accept this as it's been completed.
Are we good, Ms. Navarro?
I am. I just would like to make a note to that, and maybe it's not for this particular case, but just in general, as the executive director, I have a difficult time when somebody submits 7 CEUs in one day. It makes me wonder how much time and energy they put into what they were learning, especially when they're online. And I just have to say that for the record, because as much as I think an NDCA is more than appropriate in this case, I want to make sure that this individual knows moving forward the importance of the documentation and et cetera. That's all I want to say. But if you want to include it, we'll be happy to put it in the NDCA.
Oh, and I thought you have that there. I have that there 2 different days. But do you want to? I'm on the 14th and the 15th.
So we actually fixed this before our board meeting today. The 15th is actually today. And so the first question to Ms. Starks is, how could you have done this today? Because we got the certificate last night. Okay. I did see the email. It appears that Arizona Trauma Institute just put the wrong date on here. Oh, okay. But it's my understanding it was taken yesterday.
Okay.
So, again, 7 CEUs in one day. And I think it's appropriate that we allow online CEUs, but I also think the intent is that people are going to walk away and it be impactful. So I just needed to say that for the record.
Thank you. I was good.
I was looking at it as it was 4.5 hours additional. Where is the 3? Maybe I'm missing the next day.
Well, actually, you're right. It's actually 5.5 plus 3.
Because it's...
So it's 8.5.
Oh, I thought this was and or.
Oh, yeah.
Or. Okay. Sorry. But it's and.
Toby, I think, is it 1.5 on the documentation?
Well, it says... No, it says and. 4 APA credits and 1.5.
That's what I thought was only 1.5. Yeah.
Is that not added together, and it depends on which one you're using?
Yeah, that's what I took away from it. The 1.5 was for counselors, and then the 3 were for the, I think, the Psychology Association.
I'm not familiar with
was the class total. How long was the class totally?
Like an hour.
Well, we wouldn't have 4 credits, though, in an hour class.
No, that's okay. Why it was, I think I was only using it as the 1.5.
That's what I was.
I was going to propose a documentation training on Arizona standards. So, you know, this was helpful that, you know, the licensee has done that. A lot of times, you know, our challenges are with the Arizona requirements, and that's where sometimes, you know, there's a little challenge. So I was going to kind of see use on Arizona documentation standards.
So the renewal tutorial? Because I can attest to the fact that the one from Arizona Trauma Institute that actually is done by our member, Ms. DeBratz, that does have a lot of documentation into it.
Okay.
From the ethical consideration of best practices. Again, it's an online.
Okay.
You know, with that being said, I think just based on the conversation, I think the renewal tutorial would be appropriate.
Yeah, so we don't have to duplicate what she has already done. Okay, who's ready for a motion?
So we would be offering the licensee a non-disciplinary consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to do an attestation for an EHR evidence in regards to training. On what she is using for her private practice. She'd also be required to take the Arizona renewal tutorial. And after both of those complete, she can ask for release. If not signed, she'd be invited to a formal interview. And if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be your motion?
So moved.
Bailey, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Yes. We would now move to Mr. Vincent Russo. Is the complainant here?
And I'm going to step out.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Let the record reflect that Megan Kramer will be stepping out for this matter. We do have the licensee and the attorney.
Okay. And the complainant is not here, right? Okay. Are they on the phone already? So, Mr. Russo and Mr. Butner, can you hear me?
Yes, Dr. Russo and I are here. Can you hear me?
Give me 1 second. Oh, okay. Are you speaking, like, really close to the microphone?
Not exactly. Hold on here. Can you hear me okay now?
We're having a little issue with the volume.
That's it. Do I need to, I saw something that said something about *6 to unmute. Do I need to do that?
Okay, so when you're speaking, you just need to speak as loud as you can, okay? So,
so you can hear us.
Can I just propose having issues with the audio, being that they're in the same room, it may make more sense for them, for maybe me to call out on my cell phone and have them on speaker. Cause I think it's going to be, I think it's an important matter. And I think it's important that we hear.
Okay. So do they need to hang up?
So Mr. Butner?
Yes.
We're going to go ahead. If you could disconnect and then I'm going to call you, back. With a private number and put you on speaker so that we can hear you better. Is that okay?
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Butner, please. issues that hopefully we're going to get fixed by next week. So I apologize for that.
All right, so we're going to move on. My name is Adalessa Meek. I'm the Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners chairperson. And I'm here sitting with my colleagues, members of the board and board staff, as long as also including members from the community. And the meeting is being recorded, and we're going to get started. So first, we're going to listen to staff summary of the case.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, I will be brief in my analysis. Just as a reminder, there was a supplement that was uploaded to the portal. Additionally, as a reminder that Mr. Russo came before our board before, and at that time, our board found a violation of 16K, which is engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession as it relates to the ACA Code of Ethics, F3A, extending conventional supervisory relationships. With that being said, after they found the violation of K, based on the concern of that particular situation, as well as a prior disciplinary action at that time, our board asked Mr. Russo to do a psychological evaluation. And Mr. Russo did do a psychological evaluation originally. However, the individual that he had approved did not read the information that board staff sent him. Therefore, it did not appear that the evaluation was valid. We brought it back to the board. The board said that was correct, that it would not be considered valid since they did not have the information that the board members had. And so we mandated that he go out and get another psychological order. With that being said, we're coming back today to discuss the psychological evaluation that he has received at this time. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Any board members have questions for Ms. Zavala? Okay, so now Mr. Butner, Mr. Russo, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board. Is that?
Do you like us to address the board now?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. So, well, first I'd just like to point out, I think the previous action that was taken by the board was a non-disciplinary action against Dr. Russo. But more importantly, we had submitted a request of a voluntary agreement to allow Dr. Russo to continue to practice without any supervisory role. So basically, it would be a consent agreement that mirrored the consent agreement prior to this, prior to the psychological evaluation for the two of them, actually. And, but the difference would be, the conclusion would be that Dr. Russo would be able to maintain his license and practice, just not in a supervisory role. I think throughout this entire process, Dr. Russo has learned, done some self-evaluation of himself, and it's backed up by, I believe, what Dr. Howe has also found, that there's been no instances of any kind of unprofessionalism with his clients. It was just merely when he was in a supervisory role that there were some boundary issues that were discussed in great detail here. And Dr. Russo realizes that. And I believe he does well by all his patients, and there's been no complaints of that. And so while it's still part of his practice, it was before when he was a supervisor, I think those two things can be separated. So, and especially after the second psychological evaluation, I think Dr. Howe pointed out those same things. And so we would hope that the board would follow Dr. Howe's recommendation and take into consideration our proposed voluntary consent agreement, that that Dr. Howe be allowed to continue to practice. It is his livelihood, and he appears to do well for his patients and can continue to do so without issue. And it seems that Dr. Howe agrees with that. So that's our desire. We're hoping that the board finds comes to the same conclusion.
Thank you. Any board members have any questions for Dr. Russo and his attorney?
I'm sorry.
Okay, there's one question.
Madam Chair, before we proceed, if I could just address what Mr. Butner said in regards to the previous NDCA, because I think it's important because it is correct, but I just kind of want to make sure that the board members have that picture clearer. Mr. Russo had come before the board in a prior matter. It was a matter concerning inappropriate behavior with an intern. With that being said, at that time, the board did offer an NDCA, which was accepted, and he was released from it. We then get another complaint. The other complaint has similar inappropriate actions being taken place with a supervisee. Based on that, pursuant to 32-3281P, in determining the appropriate disciplinary action under this section, the board shall consider all previous non-disciplinary and disciplinary actions against a licensee. And it's my opinion, you know, based on bringing that action forward is what the board members brought to a concern and had the evaluation because it was a second time behavior. And that's just what I wanted to say in regards to that.
Ms. Bailey, you had a question?
I do. I'm Kim Bailey here. Dr. Russo, your attorney attests this morning that you've had some self-reflection. One, may I ask, is there any reason why you're not present today here?
For the same reason I wasn't there last time. My health is not well. I don't travel well.
Okay. And so would you care to talk to whatever these self-reflections are that your attorney mentions?
Yes. When, you know, the issue of being a supervisor, I was never a supervisor until I came to Arizona. And the fact is that my resume looked so good that people were offering me supervisory jobs, which I had never been trained as a supervisor, but I needed to work, and so I took the positions. In retrospect, I am not, you know, a supervisor. I'm a mind therapist. I don't have the skills to be a supervisor. Again, I'm not academically formally trained in supervision. And at this point, I would prefer that I never have to be in a supervisory position again. I do very well privately with patients, and I'm hoping that the board will allow me to continue practicing, but not in a supervisory role. I don't have the skills to be a clinical supervisor.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so we're not going to move into deliberation, and we ask that you do not interrupt us during this time. And Dr. Bailey, you're leading the discussion.
Sure. I was a little bit surprised at the findings from the evaluation. I think I was thinking we'd have some kind of explanation for why we would treat just humans in our profession the way the past issue that came before us, as well as this current issue. I was not in support, really, of this person practicing, and I have done a lot of thinking about that. I'm not hearing today in my question of asking about reflection. When we hear that we've had a lot of self-reflection, it's usually on our behavior, not necessarily. All I heard was I don't have the supervisory skills. And when I hear that, I think theoretical orientation, how to supervise models, documentation, how to handle what the supervisee gives us, you know, as far as their challenges. I didn't hear self-reflection on just how I treat other people. And that really bothers me because that's the problem here in two separate issues that have come before us. The other issue that I have is, you know, just the statement that we have no issues with clients. I hope not, but I'm not super confident on that. We don't have any before us, but this is just how we treat our coworkers. I don't know the separation. When I hear that there's a clear separation, I don't know how we have a clear separation on it. I'm going to treat coworkers one way, but I'm going to treat clients another way. To me, they're all people looking for interaction. If it was a skill set issue, again, this would be a different conversation, but this is how we treated another person in our professional capacity and kind of that power dynamic that just automatically inherently comes. And it inherently comes with supervisees. It inherently comes with clients. So we don't have before us, and I'm making a subjective statement, but I'm not so sure that things haven't happened. And so I'm super uncomfortable with that. So I am prepared to propose a consent agreement. I am prepared to rely on the professional that we asked for an evaluation. I'm prepared to utilize their recommendation. But before I say that, does anybody have anything else you want to add? Because I do not want to dominate.
If I can take just a little pause, do we need to first decide if we accept the evaluation, Ms. Zavala?
No, the evaluation is just a tool that the members can use in determining what the consent agreement should look like. We've already found for the violation, so it's really just a tool that we can use to develop a consent agreement if that's what we're wanting to do.
Okay, thank you.
So I wanted to weigh in on this one. I actually thought this was assigned to me and came up with this huge thing. Anyways. So when you started speaking up, I'm like, wait a minute, this is mine. So I sat with this one a lot. And it's because, as Dr. Bailey already mentioned, I'm very uncomfortable with this one. And I'm really uncomfortable with it because of the egregiousness of how a licensee treated people or supervisees and interns who are just as vulnerable as a client who is in our care in terms of wanting to grow and wanting to learn. And I think taking advantage of that power dynamic is shameful. I'm just going to say it's absolutely shameful. And I thought about, you know, last time we talked about this matter, we were considering voluntary surrender of license, right? And then I was trying to figure out what was the impetus for us requesting a psychological evaluation? Because the way I saw it was we were looking for some type of psychopathology or psychological distress that would lead somebody to treat people in this manner. So the way that I interpret the results of the second evaluation is that there was none. That this person, and if you read the report, is in sound judgment and has insight. So for me to sit here and say that someone who has sound judgment and insight still engaged in egregious behaviors and treating people this way and multiple people, you know, I don't have the proof for this, but I can say in my experience, supervisors and managers who treat people badly treat their clients badly. Because it's a reflection of how they operate. So I just want to go on record and say, I don't take any of this lightly, and I'm really uncomfortable with this person practicing.
And I would agree with that too. And I'm trying to actually find out what page it's on the evaluation. But I do believe it spoke to the guardedness during testing, which is concerning. Someone who knows about this type of testing, is educated about this testing, would have more of a ability to be guarded and perform in a way that they may be able to shape or skew, which creates concerns for me too. I do also believe that the feedback in that part of the report was that the board should take caution in the decision today, that it wasn't just a straight everything is fantastic, go do. That was actually not the impression I got from the report, although you're right, it, you know, have those other elements. So I am also very uncomfortable with allowing this person to continue.
All I have to say is that I support what you guys have said. The one thing that really, concerned me is that Dr. Russo treats the CEO in a different way that, you know, that treats other people. And so I wonder, you know, there's tiers on how we're going to interact with different people, and that kind of bothers me. So it's a long, I don't have anything else. I agree.
Can I just say something? Antoine Trotter here. Maybe it's because you're within your industry, but I think your industry is kind of leading you here. I'm in finance, and with all due respect, we treat our VPs different than we treat our coworkers. And I have worked with people that have been promoted and then demoted because they are great at their particular job, but when it comes to anything to power, they're not great. And some people just have problems with that. What it means to be a leader, what it means to be a proper supervisor, you know. So in my mind, I can separate the two things, that somebody could be a good profession at a particular job without having that job with power or authority. Yeah, I mean, it's still a character issue. There's concerns, because I definitely am uncomfortable with this, but I guess I didn't have the same level of concern as you guys did, because I have, over the 16 years I've worked at my place, I have seen people go up and down, and some of them have issues with their character, but it wasn't necessarily because they were bad at their job. It could be because they didn't have the training or didn't want to develop themselves when it comes to these leadership positions, because it's not just about, you know, a lot of, I think, companies look at people and be like, hey, if you're a high performer, you should be a leader. No, not every high performer is a leader. And so I just hope the board takes some caution with this, because I want us to take caution, but just from what I see right now, I don't think I'm as far along as you guys. And I understand that in your particular profession, you should be more cognizant of things. You should have more emotional intelligence. But I've been on this board for several years, and it seems like that's a blind spot, regardless of the professional training. So that's my two cents as an outsider. You know, some people should not be in leadership, but it doesn't mean that they're particularly bad at their particular job. That's all I'm coming from. But am I concerned with the behavior? Yes. Am I concerned that this is the second time? Yes. I guess am I concerned that he cannot help anybody? That he's a danger to the public. I don't know if I'm there yet, but is he maybe a bad coworker? Possibly. That's my two cents.
Thank you.
The one thing I was thinking is, you're talking about some people can be a good supervisor or a bad supervisor and still be good at their job. But the way I look at it is, when you're dealing with your client, you are still kind of in a supervisory role over them, you know. So I kind of see that it works with both groups, not just as a supervisor of staff.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think where the parallel is being drawn is that when you are a supervisor or in a leadership position, there's an inherent, you know, power differential there, right? Same when you're in a counseling relationship. There is a power differential there that is similar in terms of how you are guiding the person that you're working with and all of that. And I think that's why it might be a little bit different than just, I'm not a great leader.
That's one question. I think ultimately, when I think about what we do here, is one thing I think of is protect the public. Do you think this particular person, because it seems kind of with the rhetoric where it's going, do you think the person is a danger to the public? Do you think, is he able still to practice and still protect the public? I guess that's what I hope wherever we go with this, that's in the back of the mind. I guess that's why I hope we focus.
I really appreciate what you've said today. It's changed my mind. I'm going to go on record saying that. And I used the word subjective on purpose intentionally earlier, because that is a blind spot. And I appreciate you pointing it out, and I'm willing to own it. In answer to your question, do I think it's a danger? Personally, yes, but I have no proof of that. And I don't want to make a decision based on no proof. So I appreciate that. I appreciate your comments today.
All right. Thank you.
So I'm willing to propose a consent agreement that's pretty rigid. Is it worth hearing? Or, I mean, we have two directions on the table. I don't know. Or do we propose that? Mark, you were ready to propose a different or something. So do you want to start?
I
could easily.
Oh, yours. Exactly. Did you want me to?
Is there a recommendation?
Let's see.
Not worth hearing.
Okay, so in giving this a lot of thought, I haven't seen a lot of these, but I was willing to consider the recommendations that were given by the professional evaluator, which was this person, if they're taken out of all of the administrative supervisory roles, he could practice. And so what I was going to propose is that we put that we offer a state suspension and that we offer a 5-year probationary consent agreement with no supervisory responsibilities, students, interns, staff, or licensed professionals of any sort, and that we get a quarterly report from any place of employment that the licensee is at, attesting that that has been met, that that requirement's been met. The other kind of stuff that we would, that we would hope would be helpful and actually provide the reflection that I would be looking for. Therapy one time a month for 2 years, maybe an early release after a year at the recommendation of whatever therapist is approved. Supervision one time a month for a full 2 years. And I would ask for 10 hours of sexual harassment and professional relationships in the workplace.
Is there a way to restrict private practice?
And yes, sorry. Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right over there. Yeah.
On the clinical supervision, what would be the focus?
Boundaries.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Professional practice.
Yeah. Maybe just the professionalism and the inherent power dynamic. I think talking about that and how that's being handled with clients, how that's being thought about, that's very wordy.
Is there any just professionalism in the workplace, how you deal with coworkers? Because he's still going to have coworkers. I mean, he needs to understand.
Yeah.
That would likely be difficult with clinical supervision because clinical supervision primarily is going to be about client care.
Okay.
I think that you would get that in the 10 hours of the sexual harassment and working with coworkers.
Or is there any CEs that, or any type of education that is, that deals with that outside of just the normal boundaries? Because I feel like that, at least in my understanding of it, it's mostly about client professional boundaries. Or does it talk about coworker boundaries and all that stuff?
Well, there are the 10 CEUs in sexual harassment.
And the quarterly report from the employer.
Co-workers. I was hoping, because 10 would be at least 2,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. If we were going to cover both of those topics, each of those topics, we would have to find something. I did see, I feel like a couple months ago, we saw some continuing education on dealing with difficult co-workers. Yeah, I feel like that was a continuing ed,
okay.
Not so much a workplace.
Well, either way, it might show some awareness.
Yeah. If you think of anything else, that would be fine.
Where in this is it addressed? Because the question that you asked is what caused me to pause. Is that if he never fails, or if he fails to ever recognize a behavioral issue rather than just a clinical structural checking boxes, making sure everything's done, then that's where I get worried. And he doesn't believe in it. So where in what we're offering is that ever?
Therapy. So I was going to throw in, we could talk about this case in therapy and how behaviorally the interaction with others, I would think maybe the therapy piece.
How often do you say supervision?
One time a month for 2 years.
I would like to start higher with more for that first year. I think there with the concern that, this may be falling over to the client area and being protecting those people, I think the higher level of oversight and other professionals being aware of what's happening with those clients and in those sessions would put the in a position of more safety for the public.
I would agree. I thought maybe the 2 years would give a longer period of time of accountability. So whatever in between is fine.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm honest, and you guys can just tell me I'm completely wrong, I would want to see weekly for the first 6 months, biweekly for the second 6 months, then monthly for that year, and then as the supervisor sees appropriate for the remaining 3 years.
That's a good point. Yeah. If we're going this route.
Well,
supervision will be offered in the agency since this person would not be able to go to private practice, so mm-hmm. we would have access to it.
Okay.
Why don't I read it back?
Okay.
And see, after putting it all together, if it would be appropriate. So we would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 5 years. During that 5 years, it will be a stayed suspension. There will be a license restriction where he will not be able to supervise anyone, including interns, admin, or other professional licensees. He also will be required to not be able to go into private practice. We would receive a quarterly report from the agency that he worked at to attest that he's not supervising anybody. He would be required to get therapy. Therapy would be once a month for 2 years. The therapy would cover the information that's in the board report as well as the evaluation. After the first year, at the recommendation of the therapist, he could be released. He would also be required to get clinical supervision. The focus on clinical supervision is going to be boundaries, professionalism, and working with coworkers. And he would be required to get weekly clinical supervision for the first 6 months, biweekly for the second 6 months, and after a year, at the recommendation of the clinical supervisor, they can lessen that time, but no less than once monthly for a total of 2 years. He'd also have to get 10 CEUs in sexual harassment and professional relationships with coworkers. And if not signed, he'd be remanded to a formal hearing.
Fine.
Does all that cover recognizing the power differential between you and clients?
I think the therapy is part, that, right? Is that, that,
can we, I can add power differential to the clinical supervision piece with clients, and we can put coworkers.
Yeah.
We also add in the therapy. I heard Ms. Knapp talk about at the recommendation after the 2 years. If the supervisor still feels that supervision still needs to happen, I would like to give the supervisor the ability to say yes after the 2 years. He feels competent or safe that the licensee is good to go. And if not, and the supervisor says, no, I think you still need more supervision, I'd like to honor that for the next however long during the 5 year probationary time.
We can add that.
Okay, so is that our motion?
So move, Trotter.
Bailey, second.
All right, roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Polly Knapp.
Aye.
Adelaide Smith.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
All right. So this concludes our matter, and all participants are free to go.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I thought you were going to say something else. Mr. Butner did email Mr. Carter and ask what a stayed suspension is. So I'm going to answer that. This is Toby Zavala for the record. A stayed suspension basically just means as long as Mr. Russo stays on the consent agreement and is in compliance with all of the stipulations in the consent agreement, the stayed suspension, it'll be stayed, meaning he will have a license. At any time, if he becomes out of compliance, board staff has the authority to lift the stay, and his license would be immediately suspended for a total of 5 years. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I'd just like to say Dr. Russo is happy to receive all of these, and I appreciate you explaining the state suspension and anything that, directly goes towards dealing with coworkers, especially because of that power dynamic, is most appreciated, because Dr. Russo definitely did see the need for that type of training and counseling, et cetera. So we're very appreciative of this type of consent agreement. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck. I call for a 10-minute recess break. Back at so right now it's 10:21. We'll be back at 10:30. Everybody back? So the board is back in session at 10:30. And we're going to move to Kevin Chung. I believe Mr. Trotter. Are you leading that? Well, oh, but we're going to listen. I'm sorry. The break was too good.
I just want to double check that Mr. Chung is not in the audience.
The complainant or the licensee, are you here? Nope. Okay, so we're going to listen to the summary from board staff first.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this comes before you today with a signed proposed interim consent agreement, which would suspend Mr. Chung's license while he works on his substance use recovery efforts. And it's just for the members to motion to accept or deny the signed interim consent agreement.
So I motion we open a complaint and accept the signed ACA.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Roll call.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Robert Charles?
Aye.
Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis?
Aye.
Polly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelisa Meek?
Aye.
Mark Shen?
Aye.
Antoine Trotter?
Aye.
Thank you. Item 7B, Amanda Curry. Is the complainant here? The licensee present? Okay, we'll now move to listen to a summary from board staff. Nope. Licensee?
Hurry.
Could she be on break? Or?
I think, Madam Chair, I would like to, just because my investigator on this matter is not in the room right now, so I would like to double check with her because that's odd for a licensee not to show up. I think it'd be appropriate if we could move to the next one.
Okay. So we're going to move to item C, Joshua Johnson. Are the complainants here? Are you complainant? All right. You can come to the front.
You're the licensee. Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let me see. Is a complainant here? Complainants here? No? Okay. So then Mr. Josh Johnson, go ahead and have a seat. First, we're going to listen for the summary from board staff.
Following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to the recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession, as it relates to the following sections of the NASW Code of Ethics 1.06C, Conflict of Interest. This recommendation is based on the following. From 10/22 to 2/23, licensee was employed as a therapist at Agency 1, where he provided direct behavioral health services to clients. Specifically, licensee treated BN, DF, HD, HH, and JGP at Agency 1. On 2/13/23, licensee completed an intake with JGP at Agency 1. On 3/2/23, licensee provided a coaching session to BN at private practice. I also want to make a note that I probably should have said initially, Mr. Johnson is licensed as an associate level, a temporary associate level. On 3/2/23, licensee provided a coaching session to BN at private practice. From 3/2/23 to 3/22/23, licensee provided two coaching sessions to DF at private practice. On 3/1/23, licensee provided a coaching session to HD at private practice. From 3/2/23 to 3/22/23, licensee provided two coaching sessions to HH. From 2/27/23 to 3/27/23, licensee provided three coaching sessions to JGP at private practice. Since 3/23, licensee has been employed with Agency 2 as a therapist. Within 1 month of providing these coaching services, licensee then transitioned BN, DF, and JGP to therapy services at Agency 2. Furthermore, licensee failed to document anywhere in the five clients' clinical records at Agency 1 that coaching was recommended service for continuity of care upon discharge. At the onset of the coaching services, licensee also failed to document his prior therapeutic relationship with each client, the rationale for transitioning them to coaching, and how there was no conflict of interest. Additionally, licensee failed to document anywhere in any of the client's clinical record at Agency 2 his prior therapy and coaching relationship with each client. Licensee, in fact, engaged in multiple roles with clients by acting as their therapist, then life coach, then therapist again without clear boundaries and rationales being documented. In addition to these concerns, licensee also anticipated one day offering various services to clients once he began operating private practice, such as doula services and other community-based services through Cultural University, showing licensee's lack of insight and understanding of dual roles with clients. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be the violation of ARS 32-3251-16D, making any false, fraudulent, or deceptive statement connected with the private with the practice of behavioral health. This recommendation is based on the following. In 3 of 23 and 4 of 23, the board received complaints against licensee alleging he had a private practice that was not under supervision. Private practice's website indicated the following. Licensee is an LMSW and founder, CEO, and therapist at private practice. Licensee has experience with teens, adults, couples, and families. Licensee is a holistic counselor and does doula services. Licensee uses CBT, mindfulness, psychoeducation, and a person-centered strength-based approach. Licensee specialties included trauma, PTSD, grief loss, parental mental health, fertility issues, LGBTQA issues, and marriage and family issues. An advertisement for Cultural University, which makes itself available to promote small businesses by using its services during events to aid in exposure to the community. Private practice offers individual counseling, marriage counseling, family counseling, and doula services, case management, and community connection. By 2025, private practice will be serving California, Illinois, and New York, and plans to develop community centers that help and enrich the daily lives of community doula services and mental health safe spaces, such as coffee shops and gyms with personal certified trainers on site. From 9/22 to 3/23, private practice's social media posts included the following in part. A 9/18/22 post included a link to private practice's website for counseling services. A 10/2/22 post indicated private practice was there for mental health needs and was accepting new intakes. A 10/22/22 post indicated someone had won a free year of counseling services with private practice, and private practice is proud to serve the community and Phoenix area. An 11/11/22 post indicated private practice provides individual and family counseling and specializes in U.S. military counseling. A 2/25/23 post indicated there was opening for therapy and life coaching. A 3/9/23 post indicated licensee was a licensed therapist and had openings for therapy and life coaching. Despite all of these advertisements clearly making it seem like private practice was a fully active and operating psychotherapy practice, licensee represents that neither him nor partner ever provided any psychotherapy services through private practice. Licensee represents the only services ever provided through private practice were coaching services. Furthermore, licensee represents that coaching was never meant to be a service that private practice would offer. Licensee represents he came up with the idea to open a private practice one day, so he created a website and began to advertise in order to put his name out there in the community. Licensee reports that when he began advertising the counseling services initially, he was working for Agency One. And if clients reached out inquiring about therapy services, those services would be provided through Agency One rather than private practice. Licensee represented the following regarding the various advertisements for different services private practice would offer. Licensee would make clients aware that private practice was a non-active practice. The free year of therapy was only after private practice was a fully operating agency with appropriate supervision. Licensee had other opportunities to possibly spread services to other states. Licensee was advertising doula services because he hoped to have someone work at private practice who could provide those services one day. Licensee does not have any training or certification for doula services or life coaching. The different modalities and populations he treated were advertised because he would provide therapy through Agency One with those modalities and to those populations. Licensee can see how this appears misleading by advertising through private practice's website and platforms when it was not, in fact, offering all of those services. Licensee's advertisements are wholly deceptive and misleading for the following reasons. Licensee represents he was never offering psychotherapy services through private practice, yet all of the advertisements for several months indicate private practice was an active psychotherapy practice
offering intakes and counseling services. Private practice was not offering doula services because private practice did not have anyone certified to provide such services. Licensees advertised Cultural University, but in board staff's investigative interview, he represented that nothing ever transpired from Cultural University. Private practice website indicated licensee accepted insurance when in fact he was not able to accept insurance, being an associate level license. Licensee advertised free counseling for a year, but during board staff's investigation, stated that it would not have gone into effect until private practice was fully operating. Licensee in turn offered coaching services to a handful of clients, but coaching was never advertised as a service offered by private practice through the website. In addition to the concerning advertising, licensee never consulted with one of the supervisors that he worked under while he was developing private practice's website and social medias. It is highly concerning that licensee was actively advertising for several months, making it appear private practice was presently offering psychotherapy services and doula services when licensee represents he never provided those services or was even able to provide such services through private practice. Following a review of the investigative record, it is not apparent whether there is clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation, ARS 32-3251-16II, violating any federal or state law, rule, or regulation applicable to the practice of behavioral health as it relates to the following, ARS 32-3286, unlawful practice. Factors for the board to consider from 1022 to 223, licensee was employed as a therapist at Agency 1 where he provided direct behavioral health services to clients. Specifically, licensee treated BN, DF, HD, HH, and JGP at Agency 1. From 11-10-22 to 2-15-23, licensee treated BN at Agency, and BN's therapy focused on anxiety, relationships, and how to work on developing relationships. DF was treated at Agency, and DF's therapy focused on relationship issues and anxiety. HD's therapy focused on anxiety, depression, and goal setting. HH was treated at Agency as well, and their focus was on anxiety, depression, and relationships with peers and families. On 2/13/23, licensee completed an intake with JGP at Agency 1, which identified anxiety relating to his extended family. On 3/2/23, licensee provided a coaching session to BN at private practice, which included a discussion around maintaining relationships with peers and family. From 3/2/23 to 3/22/23, licensee provided two coaching sessions to DF at private practice, which included discussions around self-discovery, quality of her relationship with her husband, and ways to move forward in life. On 3/1/23, licensee provided a coaching session to HD at private practice, which included a discussion around goals HD wanted from coaching. From 3/2/23 to 3/22/23, licensee provided two coaching sessions to HH at private practice, which included discussions around increasing self-worth and maintaining positive relationship with peers and families. From 2/27 to 3/27, licensee provided three coaching sessions to JGP at private practice, which included discussions around improving relationships with extended family and boundary setting. Since 3/23, licensee has been employed with Agency 2 as therapist. Within 1 month of providing these coaching services, licensee then transitioned BN, DF, and JGP to therapy services at Agency 2. The focus of the services at Agency 2 appear to remain the exact same, since similar topics were discussed during sessions at Agency 1, private practice, and Agency 2. Despite licensee documenting at the onset of coaching services that the service would be non-clinical and non-diagnostic, the focus of therapy at Agency 1 and Agency 2 were the exact same as the focus of the coaching services. It is highly concerning that licensee felt it was appropriate to take therapy clients, transition them to coaching services, and not provide psychotherapy modalities, and consider this as not therapeutic when, in fact, the focus of service was the same the entire time. It appears licensee was using coaching as a way to circumvent the system to provide therapy services under the guise of a life coach, since life coaching is a service not regulated by the rules or laws. Licensee also represented that the intention was to offer coaching temporarily until he began working at a new group practice as a therapist, showing that licensee was fully aware that clients he took on as coaching clients in fact needed therapy services. Furthermore, it is highly improbable that any of these clients could be transitioned from therapy to coaching practically overnight, then right back to therapy 1 month later. It appears these clients needed the higher therapeutic level of care the entire time licensee was providing therapy and coaching services to them. Additionally, licensee's consent for coaching discussed confidentiality when coaching services do not have any laws around confidentiality, and he lists his licensure within the consents when coaching does not require licensure. Even more concerning, the licensee represents he does not have any formal training in coaching services and simply did his own research on coaching before beginning coaching services with 5 clients. Private practice website also never listed coaching as a service licensee offered and only listed therapy and counseling services. Licensee represented that coaching was not meant to be a service that private practice offered and that the advertisements were simply a way to get his name out in the community for when he was able to engage in private practice. Upon review of the private practice website and social medias, licensee was clearly advertising as if private practice was an active and operating psychotherapy practice based on the numerous postings and advertisements beginning as early as 9/18/22, indicating private practice was offering intakes for counseling services. Furthermore, private practice's website indicated licensee offered various types of counseling services and listed his areas of specialty, which did not include coaching. Licensee was not aware of the board's supervised private practice program, which requires pre-approval from the board if an associate-level licensee wants to open up their own private practice. Licensee was under the impression he just needed a clinical supervisor, showing licensee's lack of knowledge of board rules. It is further concerning that immediately after graduating and obtaining a temporary license, licensee begins to market himself without fully understanding board's rules and regulations. And that's all I have, Madam Chair, unless you have any questions.
I don't thank you. Any board members have any questions for Ms. Zavala? Okay, so we have licensee Joshua Johnson in front, and you have 13 minutes to address the board.
Oh, okay. I didn't know the mic wasn't on. I'm sorry. So just to give you guys a brief backstory, what was going on. Once I was working in an agency called Focus Family Services, in which I discovered that the person who owned it was a bachelor's level psychology, major. And then I discovered, of course, this is like, fine. Again, in learning all this, there's a clear tape, gray tape, and red tape area. And so I kind of fell into between that where, people were going through access to get serve, to create these agencies, with little to minimal education. Again, the goal was to, again, that's what I was kind of toying with. What do I want to do? Do I want to do private practice or do I want to do, agency work? And so when I was talking to other professionals and other people that, I thought I trusted, to gain information from, I went ahead and just got eager and excited and just started building up stuff, even with the website. And even when I discovered like funding and all that stuff, I immediately went to a stop. I was like, no, I want to earn my stripes like everyone else and go through a private practice. The website completely stopped and I wasn't posting, or unless I was posting mostly just like encouraging things or things that would help, again, do promote me because I was educated when I first started private practice that, even you wait for the agency to get referrals or like you have to kind of like advertise yourself. That's how I was kind of taught. And so with those Instagram postings, again, the goal at one point was to possibly open, even again, focusing on like the access side of it. And when none of those things happened, I immediately stopped on the website, stopped posting. And even then, even when the complaint came through, I seriously sat back and I looked in and I was like, oh my God, I can see how this can be misleading. And I'm very apologetic to not only the public, but to each board member here. Immediately after talking to Jared and doing the first part, I remember emailing and creating an action plan where we stopped everything and ceased everything. We took down the website, we took down Instagram, we took down, any misleading information. And looking back on, I can see how that could be a dual role. And yet again, I can apologize. I can't change the narrative of anyone else's but my own. And it wasn't with no ill intention. I really have been focusing on, becoming the best LMSW that I can be, and realizing that, those things were wrong. There's no excuses for it besides me not lacking the education as mentioned. And so, I'm very grateful again sometimes things have to fall apart in order to fall in place. And I think that these past few months, it has really taught me to slow down. It's taught me to educate myself, even understanding state laws. Again, not to sometimes clear out the noise and look at the evidence that's in front of you, such as being more informationally aware. You know, even as I'm studying and getting closer to my exam date, there's so many, even just in this moment, I was using you guys as an example of learning about just like interdisciplinary collaboration, where people put their difference, their own personal differences aside to learn, to get really to the fact of helping a person, rather if it's again a complainee, or again, if it was another client that was here presenting, and just watching, again, learning that this is real. Like, this is the stuff that we learn in school is real, and it's important to apply those things. So again, I have done my best to educate myself, to learn, and you probably will be seeing me more at board meetings, not on this side of the table, but just in the back, to sit back and continue to learn to educate myself. So again, you know, I have done my due diligence of making sure those things are removed. My goal was to become a hub. So the goal was for Radiant Truth Counseling to be the therapeutic side, informing, you know, again, I'm a people person, so I want to make sure people feel loved and educated and learned through, especially when they never had those things. And so my goal was to have it where women or people or families can have, you know, a doula that's kind of informational. Then, you know, of course, case management, going into helping people learn, you know, how to navigate systems within a community. And then Culture University is something completely separate, and I don't understand how those things got blended, but I can see how they could if they're all sharing the same website. Culture University is just to help promote small businesses and to encourage and give back to the community, something that I used to do in Chicago called Mission Marchers in 2012, me and a group of my friends. So, again, I do apologize for any misleading information, and from the bottom of my heart, I really do. And I understand what the board has to do on their end, and I just ask, just how we give to our clients second chances and we encourage them, I just ask that my second chance is available from you wonderful people. So thank you.
Thank you. Any board members have any questions for the licensee?
Thank you.
So I have a few questions. A little bit about this sort of access side and things functioning through that.
So when I was talking to, at the time, the person who was who owned that business, which is unfortunately a closed business now, was that, like, you know, oh, well, you don't have to, only thing you have to do is, like, you utilize the information, the license that you already have, or you don't have to necessarily be licensed through Access. You just need to be able to get, like, through Mercy Care and these insurance things. Or what someone else was teaching me about was going through the, I guess, the, another direction where you go through, like, the American Indian. And I was like, well, that's not, I don't want to do that. So that's why I said, after learning some of the things and it wasn't really adding up for me, then I stopped altogether because it just didn't make sense to me. So I guess to make it make sense to the, on the other side of it, I could see how that could be reading or misunderstanding. But again, I was taught that, like, okay, well, if you go through Access, like, that's a different, there's different requirements regarding from, like, when you go through Access or, like, the board to open a private practice, from my understanding.
Okay, and then you talked about kind of one of the things you had learned was wanting to, you know, or now educating yourself on state licensure and state laws and all of that. Can you tell me a little bit about the work you've been doing surrounding that?
Yeah, so I definitely have been taking more time out, like, looking up, like, of course, the state of Arizona laws, because laws are completely different. Even relearning and rereading, like, major textbooks about, like, social work in general. So, like, the one that I just finished was that done by Dom Alcabar, which is also focusing on the LMSW exam, but just, like, in components of ways of how you go about, you know, social work. And, like, again, the importance of, like, working together collaboratively, or again, understanding your state laws. And again, I think for me too, this was a conversation I was having with my mom, is that, like, you know, sometimes you just kind of breeze through life and you just kind of, like, just keep moving and you don't pay attention. Even just relooking at other people's complaints, very small details, again, can cause really unfortunate outcomes to people. And so it really just reminded me to pay attention to those details.
Great, thank you. And then can you tell us a little bit about your
like what the differences in the services were between when you were at agency one, went to the life coaching. How did that look different for those people?
So thank you for asking it, because I guess I also didn't go into the backstory of that. So I was actually at one point, again, I began wanting to open up something that was like end of October. And then I was like, wait, no, I want to go earn my stripes. So I was working from a private practice again from that October to whenever that date was, I believe it was March. And that relationship ended so abruptly with that supervisor, from me being them being very unprofessional. And I didn't know my, and again, this goes back to lack of education, which I'm 100% understanding. It just everything happened so abruptly. And in my mind, I was like, well, I got to take care of the client, you know? And so like in my mind, I realized, okay, well, I know this person isn't a danger to themselves. Like I thought about all those things. And again, life coaching was not at all, as I mentioned to Jerry in my investigation, life coaching was not at all a part of a service that Radiant Truth or myself was planning on doing. But I had clients that were like, hey, wait, I want to, you know, go with you, or like, you know. And again, I did my research and was like, okay, life coaching is just really focusing on their interpersonal goals, not necessarily their mental health goals. And so like with that, I just, again, lack of education, I 100% admit it. You know, in my mind, it just made sense to just try to, you know, I just wanted people to feel like they had a connection to something still. And again, that was more of not paying attention to board requirements, or again, deeper dive of education, but more just morally for myself, being a caring, giving human, making sure a human has something. but again, looking back on it, there's better ways to do that.
Okay, so this concludes our evidentiary portion of the meeting. Oh, so another question? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Question for board staff. Can you explain the temporary license process?
Yes. So we have something in our rules that if somebody has graduated in the last 12 months, they can apply for their associate level license as well as a temporary license at the same time. And the temporary license will be issued rather quickly. It'll be good for 1 year. With that being said, it'll give them an opportunity to have a year to take the test. So that's where Mr. Johnson is right now.
Good question.
And even with that, I kind of wish that I did not do that route. I kind of wish that I would have, and this is all seriousness, I really wish there was a space where I actually did more research and did more. I guess I can see the importance of the temporary license because it lets you get into the field, but again, it's such a mixed component of information that you get from other people that I really wish that I would have focused more on what board standards were, like, you know. And I think that would have been more educational for me, or even like an educational class for future board, you know, for people who want to go through the board. I think that would be very important, because there is so many changes, there is so many laws, there's so many components to it. That again, like, you know, again, even though for myself, looking back on it, I definitely could have did more on my end, but I think you just sometimes expect it to come to you. And that's not fair to that person either, to just expect that. So again, I do apologize, but I could see how that could be.
Thank you.
I have one more question for board staff. Mm-hmm. What, are there any limitations on I guess, issuing, you know, temporary licenses, like, you know, other than having them take tests, do we put any other limitations on a temporary license on an associate level, or like, what does that look like? Or is it just,
It's a great question. You know, we view it as, you can work within your scope. So you can work just as if you have an associate. The only caveat is with a temporary license, you cannot open up a supervised private practice.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
It was just a little bit odd to me, so I just want to ask that one of your fees for life coaching was $85.62. Can I just ask how you arrived at that as a fee for life coaching?
Yeah, so in doing some research regarding like what other people charge in the area, I kind of just kind of combined that and talking to, like, picked up the phone one day and was just calling a lot of different life coaching providers and just seeing like what is the typical cost, or like asking them what their fee were. And some people charge like $300 in Arizona for life coaching. And then for me, I was like, well, okay, I want to stay in a margin. So I looked up the margin typically, and the margin as low as like 875 to then 100, and I mean, like, yeah, 185 between that margin, so normal margin. And so with that, I just was like, okay, you know, I just want to stick to a space where, again, I want to be able to still help people. And so that's kind of where I just got that number. But again, lack of education, I think it was just one of those shot in the dark situation, if I could just be honest.
Any other questions? Okay, so this is time for the board members to deliberate, and we ask that you not interrupt. We have Ms. Knapp. You're leading this discussion.
Well, after reviewing this lots of lengthy documentation and listening today, you know, there's so many layers to this onion in particular, to say the least. I think we have a lot of concerns and a lot of evidence to be able to make the findings, and certainly the findings surrounding the NASW Code of Ethics and 16D, but I think certainly there is some discussion needed for the finding of the unlicensed practice of psychotherapy. I know that was brought by the board staff as being an area for further discussion to look at. You know, so I would definitely want to open that up to the group to hear what my colleagues think. Part of what I'm hearing is there was a lot of outside influence that that you were kind of listening to, right? And then there's a want to increase education and to look into laws and licensure practice and to make sure that all of that is sort of on board. But in answering some of the questions I asked, it doesn't sound like that is necessarily happened to date yet. So I guess I want to hear from you guys on what your thoughts were on this and how we should move forward with this. I feel like it's really, really egregious, and that there is evidence that things were presented to the public in a way that was completely misrepresented, that psychotherapy was most likely happening in the life coaching sessions, and we can see that based on the notes and the information provided, and also the pattern of the people going from therapy to life coaching to therapy, which leads me to believe there wasn't a plan or anyone looking out for these clients that may have needed a continuation of psychotherapy during that time. That's my initial thoughts, but I'd love to hear from everyone else. A lot happening.
I see Mr. Trotter.
Oh, no, did you say anything about the K violation? The 16K? I just didn't hear, I guess. The role change? I just didn't hear anything.
Oh, I feel like that. Well,
That was apparent. Okay.
Yeah, it was really apparent to me,
well,
but definitely.
Making sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Any comments?
I'll say a couple things. The first is, you know, we just never really know when there's a transition between therapy and life coaching, whether it's true life coaching in the room or whether it's therapy from a client's perspective. I think we can be near certain that they probably feel like it's therapy because this is someone who has been their therapist before. But it's interesting, you know, I think either, you know, we don't know exactly what happened in the room, but either it's unlicensed practice of psychotherapy or it's a dual relationship. You know, it could even be both, you know, but it's like, I always sort of do this analogy where it would be totally inappropriate, you know, for a counselor or a social worker after concluding therapy with a client to then become their electrician or something like that. So it's obviously inappropriate for them to become their life coach. I don't think there's any question about that. That's if they're providing actual life coaching, which, you know, I don't know that we know that. So, you know, I'm okay with unlicensed practice of psychotherapy, or in the alternative, I think, you know, we could even, you know, if we don't think there's clear and convincing evidence for that, then I'm fine with, you know, adding something on dual relationship or just the first two. I think it's all sort of wrapped up in the same behavior, and you know, life coaching is problematic. Like, it, you know, it's it makes it hard for us because we can't regulate it. And then people feel like it's something they can do, but really it's a question of what does the client think? And I think given what we've seen here, it's very likely that it's clear and convincing that the client thought it was therapy, you know?
Thank you. I know. Dr. Bailey, you had
I'll add, I agree with Ms. Kramer, so I'll try not to duplicate. I feel like the paperwork is set up as a private practice. If I just go, so a client signing this, even though we have one statement that says this is non-clinical and it's a non-clinical practice, everything else follows what we see in informed consents, which would, you know, lead me to believe we did some research on what informed consent should look like. But there's many attestations by the licensee from what from the paperwork. You know, one, the laws require, standards of our practice require we keep treatment records. We don't consider like coaching treatment. In general, laws protect the privacy of all communications between client and life coach. We can only release information with our work with your written permission. A lot of the language is used that is in every psychotherapy informed consent. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like we had a statement inserted, which could easily be removed, and everything else follows. We even refer to HIPAA. We don't refer to HIPAA with life coaching. So I feel like we have clear and convincing evidence that it is set up that way, and that the paperwork that client signed would indicate in an incongruence of, am I getting life coaching or am I getting psychotherapy?
Anybody else?
I'm just thinking of Ms. Kramer's view. You know, with the dual relationships, I'm thinking like, is it almost like a scope of practice issue or no? Or I think, I mean, in a sense, it's not necessarily, I'm just trying to find the language that kind of, because to me, I don't necessarily agree with the last violation, but I do believe there's something there, you know? Can we have some discussion on that? Because I don't necessarily know, well, in my opinion, with the unauthorized private, with the psychotherapy. But I feel like something happened, but I don't necessarily know if it's to that, if that's the best language for it, I guess.
I think my first... Do you want to go ahead and answer? My perspective is that it seems like the licensee didn't know the difference and was trying to figure it out as he was going and knew some things about, you know, psychotherapy. So it seems like his documentation and what he was doing is more towards psychotherapy than not, with the exception of that statement in the documentation.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know. I think that if we found the first two violations, probably memorialized the behavior enough, unless we wanted to vote on the third. I think we've got clear and convincing evidence, but I could see where folks think it's less of a slam dunk. So I'd be comfortable, you know, just going with the first two, unless you all wanted to vote on the third. I mean, the difference between when I give the example of, you know, so someone goes from being your therapist to your electrician, there is a meaningful difference between that and going from being your therapist to being your life coach, because, you know, though it's a dual relationship and you're paying someone who used to be your therapist, you're not expecting your electrician to help you in a therapeutic way. And I think the expectation is most certainly that you're expecting there to be therapy from a life coach, especially given what we see in the consent to treat. So I think we've got clear and convincing evidence, but I could be persuaded that we could just go on the first two.
Yeah, and Megan, I agree with you. I think listening to you and Dr. Bailey, it is clear and convincing, especially when everything is lined up identically or following the guidelines surrounding a psychotherapy practice. And I think that's really important given the magnitude of the manner. So I don't know if we need to take a vote to find, but I would be in agreement with. unlicensed private practice manager.
I'm going to add, I'm sensitive to let go of the unlawful practicing. I will own that I'm sensitive to associate level licensing licensees opening a private practice for this very reason, that there's very little oversight in private practice. Here is a little different situation, but that just was unique and or coincidental. Having not knowing the rules and going out into private practice and opening a private practice is an issue, and it's an issue that we've been dealing with, and it's an issue we'll continue to deal with. So I'm uncomfortable letting it go, just because it does appear that this is all set up around providing those kinds of services, and we didn't go through the rules.
And I'm concerned with that too. We've set it up in a way that it shows that there was attention to detail, research, all of that, but we missed the rules about that we're not allowed to do this. We don't have supervision. We're not licensed by DHS, which is how you know, and we're not adhering to any of the rules set forth by the board.
I think there was an eagerness to serve the public. And got ahead of himself a little bit. So yeah, I might want to be a plumber, and I put up a website, and I'm ready to see how much business I can get in and help. It's not as sure that's fine. For actual development. That's where this makes me go, okay, this analogy is a little more dangerous than it seems. But all that said, I think that from what I've heard today, there's a difference between what I read and hear from somebody and seeing that there was that desire to help the public.
Ms. Zavala, do we need to vote on?
Well,
on
if you're going to find the violations, we need to have a vote on the violations.
Well, and I think in if you could help us understand if we were, because there's a temporary license, there's a, can you just explain?
So he has a temporary license right now, and you know, at this stage, it's kind of not, we're not quite there yet, but if the members were to find a violation, if you were going to offer a consent agreement, that consent agreement would be signed under the temporary, which would then go over to the associate level. Okay. The other piece of that is if you don't feel that he should be practicing and you wanted to not allow him to have a license, then what you would do is you would deny the application for the LMSW. So I guess the first stage is to see if you want to fine for the violation. The second stage is, what do you want to do? Do you want to offer him a consent agreement, or do you not want him to have a license? And then that becomes important, whether it's on his temporary or his associate.
So we need to decide on the violation, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is anyone wanting to take the violations separately?
Did anyone say yes? Sorry.
Like each one?
No, nobody.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Oh. Okay.
Well, and I mean, I'm leading this case, so I guess it is for me to do. But I would consider revocation or a non.
We have to fine for the violations.
Oh, before we do that, okay.
So there's a violation of ARS 3281K 1.06C, and that was for the role changes. Mm-hmm. There's also a violation for ARS 3232516D. And that was for the advertisement, the false advertisement. And then the third violation, which I believe is the one that Dr. Bailey would like to have separate, and that's for ARS 3232516II as it relates to ARS 323286 unlawful practice.
So would I motion to find the first two, or do I need to do three?
She wants them separate. So the first motion would be, if it's your motion, would be for the K and the D. That would be the first.
Okay, but they can go together. Yeah. Okay. So I would motion that we find a violation of unprofessional conduct of ARS 3232516K and also ARS 3232516D.
Second, Kramer.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
And then the third one, the next motion would be for the double I as it relates to 32-3286.
Right. So I would also motion that we find ARS 32-3251-16 double I as it relates to ARS 32-3286 unlawful practice.
Second. Kramer.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now we'll move on to recommendations.
Well, I am of the opinion that we should not approve the application for licensure. Is that right? That's right, right?
Well, you have two choices. So right now, Mr. Johnson has a temporary license. If the board agrees that you would like him to pursue his LMSW, the board would offer a consent agreement and put the whatever stipulations in place that you would want. If the board does not feel that Mr. Johnson should be practicing, then what you would want to do is you would deny his LMSW for unprofessional conduct. Two very different options. It gets confusing, but you know, I think the first discussion is if you believe that he should have a license, what does that consent agreement look like?
So do I need to make a motion or do we just go to more discussion?
I think we should discuss because I think there's some disagreement with the motion. Yeah.
I'll just go. I'm okay with the consent agreement. So I would vote no. I do agree that he got very excited and wanted to provide a lot of services. I appreciate him clarifying that he has done, you know, the community collaboration piece, integrated services is kind of what I'm hearing. Big movement to that in these healthcare 8 days, but we did not do what we needed to do mm-hmm. in order to get that going, and so I kind of feel like if we had a really nice consent agreement that really required a lot of with a lot underneath them before putting two feet.
And I wanted to second Dr. Bailey, just because this licensee is so new to the field. I mean, obviously he did work back in Illinois, Arizona. And if it wasn't for those two things, I think I might have been at a different place. But unfortunately, I see a lot of people that come in here and get ahead of themselves trying to open up businesses. And that's one of the common issues that we look at, it seems like, every month. So I think a strict CA would do well. And to kind of give him the proper structure that he should have had to begin with. Since we don't seem like we get a lot of temporary licensees in front of us. So it was kind of good kind of going through this process, kind of see what they go through and kind of be aware of that, at least for me, for future, cases. So.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of education, you know, like Dr. Bailey said, might be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can, and I've spent hours poring over all the documentation and really wanted to take time to really listen today. And I think that I agree and that there were so many challenges and the eagerness got in the way, and that we do see this regularly as far as, right, like people aren't paying attention to the rules, they're not reading the rules. Unfortunately, what that is creating for clients and members is unsafe. And until we say it is not okay, right? I mean, if we look at the sheer numbers, like it, you know, the organization initially that he was working for is no longer open, right? Was their supervision by an appropriately licensed person? I don't know. Has that person, which I also almost forgot but want to look at, we'll get to that, you know, do we need to open a complaint against someone else within our field that was supervising this person, that knew about this website, that didn't bring it to anyone's attention? So we need to look at that. The other piece on that is there was information online published everywhere that said, I am a person qualified and licensed to do psychotherapy, you know, everything that we saw in the documentation on the website. So not only am I saying, come to me for life coaching, which is probably not an appropriate step down for this person. I mean, we didn't even find a violation for the appropriateness of closing out services or continuation of care for these people, which didn't happen, no matter how we found that didn't happen, right? For those members either. So we've put them at risk. Now a person has presented themselves publicly as all of these things that they are not, which is misleading at the very least. And when I think of myself as just a human, you know, with a daughter and a family, if I saw that stuff online, of course I want to go be life coached by this person that does all of these other things too, because they have this huge breadth of knowledge. That wasn't even the case. And I think I would agree that with one of the statements from the board investigators is that, you know, he found the loophole. He found the life coaching could be a continuation of the service. And that's really not okay with me. And I think it presents a danger to the public ongoing.
Ms. Zavala, and if we were to deny the application for license, is that like for a period of time?
Well, basically, once somebody's license is denied, at any given time, they can come back and reapply as early as that following day. With that being said, it would go in front of the board again for review and consideration.
Of the same issues that we're faced with?
Yeah, I mean, okay. We wouldn't reinvestigate it, but we would definitely take a look at the denial letter on why they were denied.
But then at that point, if they return with an application, we have nothing that would substantiate that this individual or a licensee has done anything to correct these issues.
Well, what it typically would look like, and it would be the same situation if somebody's license was revoked or denied for professional mm-hmm. conduct, when they come back before the board, the investigator's job would be to, what have you done to rehabilitate yourself or educate yourself so that moving forward you won't make these same types of mistakes? So that's what we would look at. You know, typically we often, in our out loud voices, we'll say the board typically likes to see a year of somebody working on themselves and doing whatever they need to do to educate or rehabilitate themselves.
Okay, thanks. Because that's making sense to me, only because licensee was saying that he would have hoped that he didn't have, you know, this temporary license, that he would have had more time. So that would make sense.
In this case, it seems like this might be one of those moments where preserving the licensee might be appropriate with a strong consent agreement. I appreciate that he has gotten ahead of himself, and I can appreciate why and how. And forward thinking. There's got to be some controls in there. And if this licensee were preserved through a solid consent agreement, and we imagine that this might be a person who absolutely would not get into
Yep, that was my thing. Thank you.
Well, if we're supposed to protect the public, I think we can protect the public better if we give them a strict consent agreement, because at that point, we're not asking them, what did you do to rehabilitate yourself? We're telling you, this is what we don't like. This is what you need to do to rehabilitate yourself, and we have control. For me, it doesn't make sense to deny the application. We've had other cases. and I'm not trying to talk about other cases where we didn't have that authority. We have the ability to tell them, hey, new licensee without prior violations. This is what you did wrong. This is what you need to work on, and we can review it. You know, we have some type of control over it. So I just hopefully the board thinks about that when we're figuring out our solution going forward. Because I do feel like we have authority and we have the tools at our hand to rehabilitate this particular new license, temporary license. But that's
okay. So could we, do we need to take like a vote on where we are?
To make a motion whether okay. you want to, Patty, or Polly, sorry, Polly, Ms. Knapp, if she wanted to make a motion to deny, see where it went, if Dr. Bailey wanted to make a motion to offer a consent agreement, somebody needs to make a motion on what direction we're going to move forward. I'm not offering a consent agreement.
I'm certainly happy to make the motion to, or
I'm willing
to make the motion to deny. I think that that's consistent with where I am. And I do hear a lot of differing topics, so I think we would need to vote.
So do we do a roll call at this point?
We need to have a first motion. We would make a motion, and then somebody would second it, and then we'd do a roll call
okay.
to see if it that motion went.
Please make your motion again, just to be clear.
The motion to deny the licensee's application.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Bailey, second.
Now we do roll call.
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Robert Charles?
Nay.
Mary Coonrod?
Nay.
Nay.
Polly Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Nay.
Adelisa Meek?
Nay.
Mark Shen?
Nay.
Antoine Trotter.
Nay.
So now we make a new motion.
Motion failed.
Motion failed?
Now this next motion needs to be a full consent agreement. We need to talk about what needs to be on a consent agreement, and then that would be the next motion, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so recommendations for a motion.
For what would be involved in a potential consent agreement?
Consent agreement, uh-huh.
I have a quick question. If I need that, do I still get to vote on the consent? Agreement?
Yes.
Okay. I just wasn't sure. There's so many.
You can even make
the motion. I don't know.
Totally new motion.
Okay.
So, but this is great that you said that. So because of your concerns, I want to hear your feedback. Is there anything that you feel like, what is the areas that you're most concerned with? And so we can appropriately memorialize it in our consent agreement.
Thank you. And I really appreciate that. Because obviously my level of concern is pretty high. I think looking at supervision, again, I think weekly for a period of time, right? Not only to work on the clinical boundaries, transitions for clients that are most appropriate, but also to focus on professionalism within the field, promoting yourself and our field, right, as a whole, as a professional. And then I would definitely want to see lots of education. And we struggle with this too, right? Because not only on our board licensure, but also state law around practicing, right? Because we do have a complicated system. We have different licensing bodies and caveats for if this person gives you the license or that person. There's all sorts of differing information, right? But we want to make sure that everyone is practicing in a way that is positive for the clients and supportive. So I would definitely want to see education.
So could we start with like maybe the duration of the consent agreement?
Early release? I'm okay with that. Is that what you're saying pretty much? Or are you talking about 2 years or 12 months?
I am thinking that because this licensee is like applying for a license, I kind of like the idea of the 5 year.
I guess I'm okay with a 2 year without
two year.
Early
okay.
release.
Okay, all right, 2 year consent agreement, and then training.
I would really want us to require some training in ethics, whether it's CEUs or not sure that we would need a 3-credit-hour graduate course, but we've got to have some ethics training to really bolster this licensee.
I think a graduate, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say in a stayed, it's hard because it wouldn't be a stayed revocation, right? Because I'm not.
No. It's up to the board members.
Well, yeah.
You can put a stayed revocation on. You can put a stayed suspension on. Or
yeah, we can do either one. I mean, if you're okay, I don't.
Up to you. Because
it's, well, because it's temporary. That's why I was asking the question. Does it?
It doesn't matter. It's a license to us. Okay. And so when he gets his LMSW, it'll just transfer from this one onto that one. And if he's still on it, it'll transfer to the next stage. Hmm. So the license follows the professional, or the consent agreement follows the professional, not the license.
And then the number, the only thing that changes is the T gets removed, right? The number would be the same.
Correct. Yeah, I wouldn't, since we're going to get, he gets a license, I wouldn't get caught up in the temporary license.
Okay, so it all just flows in that way. And so I would like something about, you know, stayed suspension or revocation, depending on what everyone thinks, if obviously that consent agreement items aren't being adhered to.
I think a safe suspension is okay at this particular point because it's the first issue that we've had with this licensee. That's what I would be okay with, but.
All right. How about.
Of course, it makes me comfortable.
Yeah.
Just because as you look through the violations, I think that a good course that gives them discussions and assignments that focus on these elements, which are things you should have learned in an ethics course, would help this individual with rehabilitation. So I would prefer a graduate course.
And I would agree.
The board members may want to consider requiring him to take the 3 CEUs in the board's renewal tutorial, which will cover a lot of our board statutes. He wouldn't be required to take that until he renews.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a suggestion.
Dr. Bailey, is there anything else? Because you had concerns as well. I just haven't heard you speak to any additional training or.
My issue was that on a temporary license, you cannot open a private practice. And that was that was just a huge rule break for me.
Can we put something in there saying that this licensee can't open a private practice or supervised private practice?
Yes, that would be a restriction. No, right? I'm checked anyway on probation.
Well, actually, he can because the rules didn't happen.
So I would like to include that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, so hold on 1 second.
Let me read back just so we can see where we're at if you want to make any changes. We would be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 2 years. There would be a state suspension, and what that means is if that individual did not comply with the consent agreement, the stay would be lifted and his license would be suspended for 2 years. He'd be required to get weekly clinical supervision, which will cover conflict of interest, boundaries, marketing, documentation, rules and statutes, and termination of services. He also would be required to take 3 CEUs in the board's renewal tutorial and a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health ethics. And his license would be restricted where on this consent agreement, he would not be able to open a supervised private practice. If not signed, he'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remand to a formal hearing.
I have a question. So with the state suspension, and this is just general, if he doesn't follow through on the items of the CA and it's suspended, it's just suspended for 2 years and then what?
And then he has to come back before the board.
Okay, he does come back.
And then he would have to comply with the rest of the remaining stipulations.
All right, thank you.
I mean, unless anybody has a problem, I'm comfortable with putting that motion on the floor.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, no early release. But I mean...
So we have a motion.
Yeah, motion.
That includes the early release. Do we have a second?
Second, Kramer.
And do we need roll call, please?
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Holly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelisa Meek.
Aye.
Mark Shen.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Thank you. So we have now completed this matter. You're free to go. And if you have any questions, you can contact your investigator.
I'm sure may make a comment.
Oh, yeah.
Those of us that did vote nay, a lot of confidence in a positive outcome.
And I take all the information very seriously. Like I said from the beginning, I was very apologetic. Again, I could see how lines can be blurred, even though I had no intention, you know, but I can see, again, how that can become intentional, even though that was not your intention. Again, my goal is just to help my people, you know, of all backgrounds. And I'm very appreciative of, again, of this experience. And I thank each and every one of you and those who continue to believe in me. I thank you for so much.
All right. Thank you. So you will be contacted by your investigator. If you have any questions, just give them a call.
No, I think, never mind.
Yeah, okay. Later.
Thank you. Good luck.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If we could go ahead and go back to Curry, which is an item 7B. It has been presented by staff that Ms. Curry was aware of the meeting. We've attempted to contact her. She hasn't contacted back. I would ask you to go ahead and move forward on this matter, and after this matter, we will then break for lunch.
Okay, thank you. Yes, so complainant is not here. Licensee is not here, correct? So we're going to listen now to the report from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16S, terminating behavioral health services to a client without making an appropriate referral for continuation of care for the client if continued services are indicated. This recommendation is based on the following. From 1/23 to 3/23, licensee was employed at agency as a therapist. On 3/7/23, licensee emailed her notice of resignation with a 2 weeks notice, with 3/21/23 being her last day. On 3/7/23, roughly 2 hours later, 2 hours after licensee submitted her resignation, complainant emailed licensee informing her that they would need to meet one or two times weekly until her departure to plan for continuation of care. On 3/7/23, several hours later, licensee emailed complainant again informing him of her immediate resignation. Licensee, in fact, resigned immediately while she had 37 clients on her caseload without making any efforts to ensure clients had continuity of care in place or provide any sort of appropriate referrals. Licensee represented the following during board staff's investigative interview. Licensee resigned abruptly because she was so ill. Licensee did not inform any of her clients of her departure because it was the supervisor's responsibility. If licensee is physically unable to work, it is not her responsibility to ensure continuity of care for her clients. Licensee believes she appropriately terminated clients by giving the responsibility to complainant. Licensee, in fact, took no steps to contact clients regarding her departure or ensure continuity of care was in place. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Board members, have any questions for staff? No? Since we don't have the licensee or the complainant, we move to deliberation. I believe, Mr. Davis, you have this case?
Thank you so much. Opposition, be quick to move to find for the violation of ARS 32-3251-16S because the facts seem to support that question. So,
I move. Bailey, second.
Roll call, please. No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Now roll call. Oh, now discussion. I'm sorry. Okay.
And I find myself wondering if we have a responsible opportunity to repair that situation. So when the licensee imagines that it is not his or her responsibility to transfer care and so forth, when understanding that they can just pass the responsibility to somebody else, whether it's all supervisor or this or that, then perform nothing in the way of assuring that continuity of care of my client is taken care of. And we're talking about 37 clients, so I'm not sure. But what I'd like to suggest is that we offer a consent agreement to the licensee stipulating the requirement that the licensee complete a 3-credit hour graduate course in ethics
as a foundational piece of training in this regard. And then the licensee should repeat the board tutorial on laws and regulations. And I'd like to hear other suggestions that my colleagues might think should go into that consent agreement, because this person has to understand that that's not the way we do it.
Is it possible we need to ask for an a medical, I don't even know the word, what I'm
evaluation
for. Because if this person is this ill that they just up and left all their client load, I'm not sure they're able to practice right now. I mean, I'm not sure. And maybe that's why they're not here today. I'm a little bit uncomfortable. Just I like the consent agreement back, but I don't know that we know that she can. Just in light of that, I was so ill that I needed to leave immediately. Can this person practice at all right now due to that?
And that really caught my attention, because if I'm that ill, then I specify what my illness might be, and I've never been ill before. I now know something about being ill, and I've advised people who need to know. If I'm that ill, then someone needs to know, and to me, that's an ethical consideration. So I don't know. That, I struggle.
Yeah, and I'm really troubled they're not here, or we're not hearing from them, because these are questions we might be able to clear up. And
I was hoping.
Yeah.
And plus, it's an LPC, so it's not a associate level license. So I was kind of shocked by that, by her response.
Madam Chair, if you wanted to, I mean, we have confirmed that this individual has been noticed. You know, we could table it, and I could have a personal conversation with this individual and express the need that they need to be here, or at least appear telephonically for next month. The violation has been found, but the members have questions. Additionally, just listening to Dr. Bailey, we could also, in that conversation, express the concern of the illness and see if it's possible we get some kind of a doctor's note. Doctors don't typically say somebody's safe and competent to practice, but at least might be able to provide us information that will make the members feel a little bit better, you know, in stipulating a consent agreement.
I'm comfortable with that. Yeah,
I'm comfortable with it. Do we need a motion to table this?
So we don't need a motion to table this, but just for the record, we did find the violation of, or the board members found the violation of S. We're going to table the matter, and board staff will reach out to Ms. Curry to describe the importance of her participating at next month's board meeting, as well as express the concerns of her medical illness, if there's some kind of documentation that we might be able to get in that, and that'll be put back on the agenda for next month. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now the board is breaking for lunch at 11:43. What time do we want to come back?
I probably think 12:15.
12:15. We'll be back. Thank you. 12. And we're going to item 7F, Cali Scalco. Is the complainant here? No complainant, licensee? You can come to the front.
Let the record show that Mr. Charles is present for this matter.
So we could please hear the summary from board staff first.
Madam Chair, members of the board, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16KK, failing to make client records in the licensee's possession promptly available to the client, a minor's client's parent, the client's legal guardian, or the client's authorized representative upon receipt of authorization to do so from them. This recommendation is based on the following. From 1121 to 522, licensee treated client at private practice. Client services were being paid for through a trust fund that was paying licensee directly. Following the end of services, complainant contacted licensee requesting a refund from the trust fund and access to client's billing account. Specifically on 9-8-22, complainant emailed licensee wanting to confirm that licensee received her email about the refund for client and request access to client's billing account. On 10-21-22, Licensee replied stating she had not been working due to an injury but is back to work and the request could take 30 to 60 days. On 10-21-22, complainant emailed licensee stating she made the request over 60 days ago. On 10-31-22, complainant again emailed licensee asking for an update regarding her request. On 10-31-22, licensee emailed complainant again stating she has been off from work for 8 weeks due to an injury and her policy is that requests can take 30 to 60 days to process. On 12-28-22, complainant emailed licensee that it had been over 60 days and asked about the refund. On 1-3-23, complainant emailed licensee stating this was her last request before she moved forward with legal action. A 2-10-23 cashier's check showed that licensee provided the refund in the amount of $625 to the trust fund and licensee mailed it via certified mail. On 2-13-23, licensee emailed the trust fund informing them she issued the refund. It is highly concerning that from 9-8-22 to 1-3-23, complainant emailed licensee at least 5 times requesting the refund, and it was not until 2-10-23 that licensee issued the refund. During the investigative interview, licensee acknowledged panicking when she received the complaint and immediately called the trust fund about the refund. Licensee told complainant that requests of this nature could take 30 to 60 days, yet licensee did not complete this request until roughly 5 months later. Furthermore, licensee's informed consent failed to include anything regarding her refund and collection policies and procedures. It is even more concerning that this request only became a priority when the board complaint was filed. Additionally, following a review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16K, engaging in any conduct or practice that is contrary to recognized standards of ethics in the behavioral health profession or that constitutes a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of a client, as it relates to the following section of the ACA Code of Ethics, A8, Multiple Clients. This recommendation is based on the following. From 11-21 to 5-22, licensee treated client at private practice. At the onset of services, licensee had complainant and client sign an informed consent, which did not specify whether the services would be individual or family. Additionally, the 11-16-21 treatment plan indicated client would participate in individual counseling. During the investigative interview, licensee represented that client's therapy was individual and family. Throughout the course of the investigation, licensee informed board staff that complainant had her own clinical records chart and her services were billed as family without the client. Complainant never signed any sort of informed consent consenting to services with licensee. Furthermore, licensee diagnosed complainant and met with complainant on 2 separate occasions without client present, despite representing it was family therapy. Licensee represented she would never meet with client and complainant together, but would bring complainant in at the end of client sessions for a couple minutes to discuss how they would move forward. Based on the clinical records, it is not clear who specifically the client was regarding client's treatment, since the records indicate individual therapy was the modality being used, yet licensee represented in the interview that she was using individual and family therapy. Furthermore, licensee failed to document anywhere in either client's or complainant's clinical records that she was treating either of them individually and separately. Additionally, licensee specifically diagnosed complainant and her intake included conversations regarding complainant's personal issues without client present, despite licensee representing complainant services were family therapy. In review of the records, licensee failed to clearly identify the specific client at each clinical record. Additionally, following review of the investigative record, there appears to be clear and convincing evidence to support the following violation. ARS 32-3251-16P, failing to conform to minimum practice standards as developed by the board as it relates to consent for treatment and telepractice. This recommendation is based on the following. At the onset of services, licensee had complainant and client sign an informed consent which failed to include 3 minimum requirements. Licensee's progress notes failed to include 3 telehealth requirements. It is concerning that in 12-20, licensee completed the board's statutes and regulations tutorial for her 2-21 LAC renewal and failed to apply basic documentation standards to clinical documentation in her private practice. Additionally, prior to private practice, licensee was approved to be in supervised private practice around 3-20, meaning licensee had been in her own private practice setting for several years prior to opening this private practice. That is all I have, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Any board members have questions for staff? No? Okay, so Ms. Galco, you have 6 minutes to address the board.
Hello. During the time, first of all, let me just say, I got into this field. It wasn't my first choice. I was in a different path, and this just became very clear that this is what I'm supposed to do. I experienced a tremendous amount of distress during the time frame in question, the 9th September through January 1st. I was in a debilitating car accident at the end of October. August 15th, I quickly had to move out of my housing situation because the housemate that I was living with, I had to have an intervention with the landlord. It became apparent that the woman was extremely inebriated and there was something going on. So I had to leave that living situation very, very quickly. And upon doing so, that's when I injured myself. I took a few months off just to recuperate. Being hit in the car accident on October 31st really put me in a completely different position. My car was totaled. It was horrific. I couldn't walk for several weeks. And I had already signed a lease agreement to move back to Oro Valley. I love it in Tucson. Love Phoenix too. Lived in Gilbert for 12 years, but something about Tucson is just beautiful. So I had signed that agreement, and with the help of family and friends from the church that I was attending, moved to Oro Valley. During that time, when I arrived, I found that the house was not only inadequate for my business, but it was inadequate to be living in. There were several health code violations in the home, including rats and mice. And so not having a vehicle, not having my physical ability to walk, now having to figure out a situation where I'm living in a rat infested house, and the people that owned the home were very close to me. It was my pastor's assistant. I was not supported by them, and I was gaslit as if I should be wrong for asking for something to be corrected in the home. So under this time, I was under extreme mental distress. And I acknowledge completely that I going forward, if I was ever faced with a situation like this again, and having been asked for refunds since this time, I don't care about money. Money is not a thing for me. If somebody wants their money back, I will give them their money back. It's not. What's most important is that I be truthful and I be honest about where I was at. And so at the time, I did the best that I could. I did call my supervisor, told me to write everything down, document everything. And when I, as soon as I had the ability, to be honest with you, to call the trust when the complainant had asked me for the money back, because the client is a Native American adoptive child, and I'd worked on the res for a while, it didn't register to me. I felt like it was unethical for me to mail the check to the mother in under her name as she had requested and demanded. It felt wrong. And at that moment, I should have immediately found the check stub from the deposit and called the trust. I didn't do that immediately simply because the storage unit was in Queen Creek and I was in Mesa. And I did not have the ability to go there. I didn't have a vehicle. And once I moved to Oro Valley and I had everything under one roof, I looked through the boxes, found the check stub, immediately called the trust, emailed the trust, and got that back. I also moved out of the rat house on February 1st. So it was during that time there was so much happening. I have extensively looked at my consents. I have extensively reviewed them and submitted to the board a correction on my consents for what was lacking. I've added some things to my notes just to really, based on what I've learned from this experience, to really make sure that I'm in compliance. I had absolutely no intention of upsetting the complainant or being in violation of any kind. So I am doing well now. I'm walking. There is no pain in my body, which is a miracle, because I could not imagine a day where there wouldn't be pain. I purposefully slowed down my practice. I purposefully reduced the amount of clients that I was seeing. I continue to talk to my mentor and a therapist that I've known for 20 years from Pittsburgh. I also have a psychologist friend from California that is licensed there that is very close to me. And we don't consult about cases, but they are my personal support. And I have extensively, it was wonderful to hear some of the suggestions because I'm thinking, I've gone through my EHR. I use Valence. I've gone through my EHR to really make sure that I know what it is. I have just recently started taking insurance, and I'm taking that same due diligence on the phone with all of the insurance companies to review all of their trainings. I really wish that I would have asked for help. I was overwhelmed and I was scared. After coming today, I don't feel that scared anymore because this is a beautiful process. So as I wrote in my statement, I fully accept whatever the board decides because I respect you as my colleagues and for the position that you hold. And I do think that there's always more that I can learn. I am a researcher and a learner. So as much of that as you want to give me, I will devour it to be better. I just wish it didn't happen. Yeah. I don't ever want to cause somebody distress. And I feel that I caused the complainant distress. I think that's all I have to actually say, but I would love to hear any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Calco. Does anybody have any questions for the licensee?
Start with a couple questions.
Yeah.
I appreciate hearing what you have to say today.
Yeah.
I had a couple questions, and actually, I don't need to ask answer that fast. Other questions, though, that will help me think about forward. Are you... do you see families and kids, or what's your population that you focus on right now?
Yeah, currently, because I reduced my clientele so much, currently I think I see 4 clients a week regularly. They're all individuals. For me, when 2 years ago when this happened, my EHR was new. I just switched from Simple Practice to Valence. I was still exploring the family charts versus the individual charts. It's a mess. But what I had agreed to verbally, and I did not write it down, but now I'm like, I'm going to write absolutely every single thing down, period. So what I was doing was, I had an individual chart for, the minor child. And mom had asked, well, do you need to do an evaluation on me too? And I said, are you interested? Do you feel like there's something wrong that is contributing to this situation? The client came to me because of some issues and a police report that happened at school. So I kept it about that specific incident. And mom said, well, yeah, I'm just angry all the time. And so I did an assessment with mom in her own chart because I didn't have like a family chart with all the tabs. So mom wanted an assessment. I did the adult symptom screener, and I don't remember exactly what her diagnosis was, but it was more for mom's information. She was really interested in that. She wasn't interested in seeking treatment for her issues, but if do any of my symptoms, can I be better? Do any of my symptoms correlate with my child's behavior? Was really what mom was asking. So I did it that way. I probably wouldn't do it that way today. I have a family chart, a family note that I do. And if it's not possible, if multiple family members want an assessment, then I document that.
in the note itself that this is part of a family chart, and that this is a individual assessment, but it is part of a family treatment plan.
We do plan on seeing families and kids. As part of your practice.
You know, I just feel that when you work with children, you work with their families, and you have to work with their families. And so I very much look at a family systems model, and I feel that if I'm talking with the families, I'm not doing them justice by saying we only need to look at this one client's symptomology. We do need to assess because there might be other things going on with other family members, depending on the situation. I also have a background in foster adoptive care. I was a licensed HCTC provider. And so working with families it's imperative. And sometimes there's secondary trauma that happens based on the situation, depending on the behavior of the child and what's happening in that home. So, I do like to treat it like that.
I'm just making sure what I'm hearing is going to be in your practice here forward. So
yes,
thank you.
Yes, it will be. Everything will be written down. I even have a personal handwritten journal that I keep things that if anything comes to my mind, I write it down for that day, and I write it down in my journal, my personal notes, just to remember for myself. I've started a whole new system for myself. I did some supervision on it before my LPC, and my supervisor and I discussed that it would be important to, because I felt like I'm not the kind of person that's going to sit there and take notes in my sessions. I want to be here with you. And so we came to the conclusion that I needed to have something there so that I can hand write down to reference for my notes and my documentation later. But also if there's anything that I think of when I'm not on my computer, that I can document it and make sure to add it at a later time in an addendum.
Okay. Did you have any other questions, Dr. Bailey? Okay. Anybody else? So this is now the time for us to deliberate, and we ask that you not interrupt.
I understand, Dr. Bailey, you're leaving it, right? I think in light of just kind of the investigation, the material that we read, I think it's fair to fine for the violations. I move that we do fine for the violations of 32-32-51-16-KK, failing to release records timely. 32-32-51-16-K, failing to define roles, clients, and then our documentation deficiencies, 32-32-51-16-K, as it relates to R461101 consent for treatment, 1106 telepathy.
Your motion, do we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Recommendations, Dr. Bailey?
Yeah, I think offering a consent agreement would be appropriate. I know that there was a significant amount of continuing education taken. We have a lot in one day. I mean, 16 and a half in one day.
Probably 2 years worth. I sent the 2021.
Yeah, but it feels like though the date is on 7/7. We have 16 and a half units completed on 7/7. Like that's what the documentation alludes to. And then we have 7 hours on 7/12. And then most of those classes, although I appreciate you taking them, all of those classes are like an hour. So I think whatever education we come up with, I appreciate that some has been taken, but I don't necessarily know that would qualify for what we hope to remediate. The situation. So I just wanted to kind of say that out loud. I'm hoping that I hope you join a consultation group. It sounds like you consulted a past supervisor, but having that in place, I'm just saying that to have that out loud. That would be something moving forward. I'm throwing out 3 units on family therapy. The reason I asked about just our population is I think that if we took some continuing ed on family therapy again, and hopefully be able to ask questions about how to document that and how to talk to families ahead of time, how to treatment plan that. I think that would be really helpful in hoping to address the multiple roles. I think maybe an ethics class would be great, not a grad class, but just an ethics, maybe a 5 or 6 unit ethics class. And again, hope to overlap with some of that. And then again, I think we've taken some documentation. I love that we're, you know, reviewing our EHR a little bit better, but maybe a documentation, 3 units in documentation with also record retention and record maintenance, just to make sure that we don't miss anything. I think probably we've tried to band-aid a bunch of the problems before, but then if anything comes up that we didn't know, we might be able to be proactive about that. And I'm open to anything else.
I would just like to add maybe 3 CEs on self-care or compassion fatigue, a topic like that, you know, with the hopes that that helps us, you know, ahead of time if something happens.
I appreciate that, and I'll just say out loud the also that idea that we have things in place when we have emergencies, and so hopefully if that's not covered in that, hopefully just saying that out loud that we have to have a plan for that. Even when our whole life falls apart, we have to have something in place that gets somebody else involved to help take care of whatever we cannot. I know that's in our rules that we attest that we have an emergency plan. But I know that it's kind of language in a way that's like if I pass away and there's a lot of emergencies.
And I forgot to address the licensee. I do appreciate that in spite of what you were going through, that you were diligent in finding out where that money needed to be refunded appropriately. Yeah, thanks. No, go ahead.
I was going to read back what you had said. So we'd be offering the licensee a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to complete 3 CEUs in self-care and passion fatigue, 3 CEUs in family therapy, 3 behavioral health ethics, and 3 CEUs in documentation in regards to Arizona minimum standards. And if not signed, she'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. Would that be a motion? So moved.
All in favor?
Need a second.
Yes, I thought. I'll second it.
Were you going to say second?
I'm sorry. No, I'll say second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
And we need a roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles. Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Holly Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Meek.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
All right. Well, Ms. Galco, thank you for coming. I believe you live in Tucson. Appreciate that. Good luck to you.
We rush upon the services this evening, so thank you.
All right.
Everybody have a beautiful evening. And then will I receive the email?
You will be contacted by board staff. If you have any questions, you can reach out to your investigator.
I wish I could just, I might hang out till 2. I don't have to.
All right. Well, thanks for coming.
We move now to 7G, Julia Spann.
And is the licensee here? You can come to the front. And if we could please hear the summary from board staff.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. Ms. Stan received, she's currently on an ICA, which means her license is suspended from our board. She had received a DUI in 2020. Board staff subsequently received the records which indicated substance abuse concerns for licensee. She then came back and requested the release from the ICA back in 7/22. And in October of 22, the board heard the information that she had supplied and at that time didn't feel that she was ready to be released. So she now came back in May of 23, and today is September of 23, asking for release of the consent agreement. So that would be the first thing that the board members would want to consider based on the information. The analysis is quite large, but what I'm going to say is I'm going to reduce it to just where we came from, the denial of releasing her from the ICA in December, because I think that's the part that's important for you all to hear. So this would be considered a violation of ARS 3232516L, engaging in any conduct, practice, or condition that impairs the ability of the licensee to safely and competently practice the licensee's profession. In 5 of 23, licensee once again requested to be released from her ICA, and an updated review of licensee's treatment records showed the following. A 2/20/23 progress note noted a diagnosis of moderate alcohol use disorder and sustained remission. A 6/23/23 psychiatric intake noted licensee has been sober for 486 days. Licensee's current employer's personnel records and character reference letter show her supervisor she has informed them of the board's investigation and her substance use history. In a written statement, licensee represented the following. Licensee's sobriety date is 2/22 of 22. Licensee subscribes to sober sites for motivation, finds strength in her recovery through exercise and meditation. Licensee was previously using what she considered to be her first sobriety date, but in order to be true to herself, she now goes by the date following her last drop of alcohol. Licensee has a large family and friend network who are non-drinkers that helps her and is there for her. Licensee did not want to lose her Arizona license. She has worked hard for it. Licensee loves her job and is grateful to be able to do crisis work remotely from home. Licensee looks forward to all that her future holds. Licensee represented the following during her investigative interview. Licensee's current employer is aware of the situation relating to the board. Licensee is proud of her sobriety. She is able to identify and recognize her triggers, lets it happen, and goes through the emotion because she knows it will not last. Licensee has learned to say no and has boundaries with people because her mental health and sobriety come first. Since her last time coming before the board, licensee has shifted her view of her sobriety date to reference the last day she consumed alcohol. Contrary to her previous interview with board staff, licensee is able to recognize what triggers her and how she copes with it. Licensee has remained sober for over a year and has a support system consistent of family, friends, and her employer. And that's all I have, Madam Chair, unless you have any questions.
Thank you. Any board members have questions for Ms. Zavala? Okay, so Ms. Stan, you have 5 minutes to address the board.
I just want to say that today I'm proud to say I'm 570 days sober. The past couple of years have been hard, but I thank God for my family. I moved back from Ohio to Tucson in April. Because I have a supportive family, they're everything. And none of them drink. I take care of my dad, who's 92. And through everything that I've been through, everything that I know I will continue to go through, I remain sober. And I'm just really proud of that. I don't know what else to say.
Okay. Thank you. Any board members have questions for Ms. Stan?
Yeah. Just a couple questions for you. You said you're coming back and you're taking care of your father, which is a little stressful. What is your support system?
My sisters. And then I have a lot of sober friends and friends I used to work with. They're all sober.
Okay. Are you taking any therapy or?
I haven't started therapy yet because I just got back and I just haven't found one yet. It's time consuming, obviously, with taking care of my dad and working full time. But that is definitely, I have my psychiatrist. I just don't have a therapist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Noted down. Can you just tell us a little bit about what kind of work you're engaged in now or plan to be engaged
in? Yeah, right now I do. I'm licensed in Ohio as well, so I work under that license. I do crisis, so I'm on the phone all day. We do 988. We have a crisis line for the company I work for, and we work with the homeless, finding them shelter. That's what I do.
What does 988 mean? Is that like 911 or?
Yeah, it's the National Suicide.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's okay. We're trying to get that out there for people to know.
Could you speak? Go ahead, Mr. Chair. Could you speak a little bit about like your self-care? What do you do for self-care?
My swimming is my number one thing. I'm in the pool as much as I can be. It's really a form of meditation for me. I just started getting regular massages. I didn't before.
I hang out at home a lot and read. I don't go out anymore because I have found I'm kind of more of an introvert now that I don't drink. So, and just being with my family.
Thank you. Did you have a question? Oh, okay. Anybody else? Any more questions for licensee? Okay. So it's now our time to deliberate. We ask that you not interrupt. And we have Mr. Shen, you're leading the... Is this your
prefer
for this
one? Yeah.
Thank you.
There were changes. So I just want to first commend the licensee on her sobriety. And I think it's you know, apparent that the licensee is in a different place now than she was last time. I think that she requested release, you know, with increased insight, obviously a good support system, a sober support system, and just seems to be in a better place. So I wanted to acknowledge that. With that being said, as I am prepared to make a motion, but wanted to hear from others if you have any comments or anything you want to share.
Madam Chair, Mr. Shen, if we could just make sure the first thing that needs to be discussed, no, we don't need a motion or a vote, but is it in agreement that she can be released from the ICA before we find the violation and offer a consent decree?
I'm in support of that, if that's what you were inferring. It seemed like that's where
that's
you
what
were
I
going.
Was inferring.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Then I move that we, I need to find for the violation. That we fine for the violation of ARS 32-32-51-16-L. Is that an L? Yeah.
Do we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Right. I recommend we put licensee on a consent agreement for, I think 12 months is okay. I want to hear from colleagues about who maybe have more specialty in substance abuse services, what else you would want in place. I couldn't think of really any education, but I think that regular therapy would be important. I would be okay with maybe, you know, biweekly to start and then less depending on a clinician's recommendation.
Like the first 6 months, or because you're saying only 1 year, so like 6 months.
Yeah, I think
the first six months,
12, twice a week. I'll try twice a month.
And then after that, maybe up to the professional.
Yeah, okay. Any education anyone would recommend or anything else? Sorry.
I like the idea of, especially since you're kind of in a remote situation, just having, and I don't know if we need to write this down. I guess it's just, but like a consultation group or group supervision, and I'm not sure how that works at your current employer, but, you know, being able to bounce clinical stuff off others that can be supportive in case anything's kind of coming up for you.
Although this, I think that maybe attending maybe two, maybe three MAT meetings.
Or equivalent.
Kind of like educational.
Or equivalent, yep.
Or equivalent. And I don't know if, actually I would like to recommend meetings like community, what do they call them? Not necessarily AA.
Recovery. Say recovery meetings in that way. She would have the ability to choose what recovery.
Yeah, recovery meetings. The frequency, I'm struggling with that. If it, you know, weekly or maybe 6 months. But again, you know, I'm thinking maybe longer. Anyway, feedback on weekly or, you know, every 2 weeks?
I think maybe every 2 weeks. Okay. It would be okay with, in my opinion. Just because it's been 500 and some odd days now.
Okay.
And that this is just a better situation than the licensee was in before.
Yes. Have you participated in any community support meetings like that?
Yeah, I used to go to AA. It just, I couldn't
it just wasn't for me.
And I think I remember reading that. That's why I want to be sure we're putting stuff on there that is going to work for you.
Right.
So maybe something different, but in that same.
That's why the language that we use is.
Recovery meetings.
Yeah,
recovery meetings. So there's a variety of them out there. It could even be through your church or somebody that's willing to sponsor you and be able to provide quarterly reports that you're in attendance.
So it doesn't have to be specific.
No.
Can I ask a question of the licensee? Because I know, Ms. Knapp, you talked about some type of consultation, and I don't necessarily know how, consultation group, and I don't necessarily know how we can oversee that, but at your current employer, do you have any type of consultation group? Does your supervisor or manager kind of talk to a group of you guys and kind of brainstorm over, cases and what you're seeing?
Daily, several times a day, because it's crisis. I don't see the person face to face, and it's heavy duty. I'm constantly in contact with her several times during my shift.
Okay.
And other employees too, if I need their assistance, but it's my supervisor.
Okay.
So if that's already in place, I don't think that we might need to include that unless she leaves that job.
Correct. And Madam Chair, I don't think that it would be appropriate. I respect the fact that Ms. Knapp brought it up. But this case is for substance use, not for something clinical in nature. I think the express from Ms. Knapp was the fact that she's in a situation where she's providing therapy in crisis situations, which I think it is important that you have a consult group. But for us to mandate under a consent agreement doesn't seem appropriate, as that's not what brings her for us here today.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Yeah. So do you want me to read back what we have thus far?
Yes, please.
We would be offering Ms. Stan a consent agreement for 12 months. She would be required to attend 3 MAD meetings. She'd also be required to attend twice a month some sort of a recovery meeting and have a sponsor to attest to attendance. She'd also be required to attend therapy, and the therapy would be addressing what's in the board report. She'd be required twice a month for the first 6 months, and after the first 6 months, at the recommendation of the therapist, but no less than once monthly. And if not signed, she would remain on the interim consent agreement. Would that be your motion?
So moved.
Second, Trotter.
All in favor?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Aye. Roll call.
Kimberly Bailey.
Aye.
Robert Charles.
Aye.
Mary Coonrod.
Aye.
Cedric Davis.
Aye.
Colleen Knapp.
Aye.
Megan Kramer.
Aye.
Adelaide Denise.
Aye.
Mark Shin.
Aye.
Antoine Trotter.
Aye.
Ms. Zavala, something I'm just thinking about after the fact. The community meetings, can we add that they could be in person or virtual?
So as we discussed at our last meeting, anything that somebody on disciplinary will always be virtual or in person at their choosing, okay, unless the board members specifically say it has to be in person.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tan, for attending, and good luck to you. Next on the agenda is Thalia Thompson. Is the complainants here? The licensee, you can come to the front. And if we can please hear the summary from board staff.
Madam Chair, members of the board, in the interest of time, I'm going to remind you that Ms. Thompson is partners with Mr. Johnson. The matter that we heard earlier today, agenda item C, based on that, we have the same 3 violations and basically the similar conduct. So I'm just going to mention the violations and just briefly remind you what transpired in those, and then move it to you to decide at that point how you would like to move forward. The first violation that we have is ARS 3232516K as it relates to the NESW Code of Ethics for the conflict of interest. And that was basically the fact of working for an agency, bringing those clients over to their private practice, providing coaching, and going back. Again, the facts are similar. They may be slightly different, but the general idea is the same. The second is for ARS 3232516D, making any false, fraudulent, or deceptive statements connected with the practice of behavioral health. This, as it relates to what was described, advertised on the website, what kinds of services that they were providing, psychotherapy and not being licensed at the independent level. And then lastly was the violation of ARS 3232516II, violating any federal or state law as it relates to ARS 323286, unlawful practice, unlawful use of title, violation, classification, civil penalty, and exception. And that's all I have unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you. Any board members have questions for Ms. Avala? No? Okay. So, Ms. Thompson, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Without being too duplicative, you know, this really kind of all transpired as, again, being eager, graduating to help the community, and being that we have jumped the gun quite a bit. I think all of this really just kind of the process with the board and being here really has kind of allowed me to take a step back and really kind of look at not just like the overall picture, but the nuances of all of this, because when we talk about, you know, the code of ethics and things like that, we know that there are a lot of nuances that you have to pay attention to. And so I think this process has really allowed me to take a step back and look at kind of where I was headed, where we were headed, and, you know, kind of the website and things like that, and understanding from the opposite side of that, how that looks to someone else. Because, you know, kind of to us, it was like, okay, we're going to get this started. We're going to, you know, kind of get our name out there. And then we kind of ran into some roadblocks, various reasons that we ran into roadblocks. And so we just kind of halted everything. It's like, okay, we're going to have to take this a different route. I think there was some, I guess, not too much realization that it would probably be wise take all of that down if we're going to halt. But it was kind of just like moving on to how do I get my hours? How do I, you know, get my supervision, things like that. But I think overall it really was just being eager and excited to get started and having to recognize that I need to go back and I need to pay my dues. And I think that's kind of really where all of this kind of transpired. Understanding that we have to slow it down. I think that's the biggest takeaway. Slow it down. It'll happen. It's not necessary to, you know, try and do all of these things all at once. You know, how you do things are in place for a reason. And so I think it's safe to say that me and my colleague and I have, you know, kind of recommitted ourselves to like educating ourselves and recognizing self-reflection and self-awareness of the things that we're doing and how it affects others. You know, because that was never our, you know, intention to deceive anyone, you know, never our intention to be harmful to anyone. You know, it was our intentions were just the opposite. So I think this entire process has really given me an opportunity.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions for the licensee?
I have a real quick question. Yep. You're currently employed, right?
Yes.
And you're engaged in individual therapy. And it sounds like you have a couple different supervisors. Do you have someone supervising you towards licensure at this point? Or?
No, not at this point.
Okay. And how are you supervised at work?
Are we talking about in terms of, like, how supervision is run? Or so there's for my level, there's weekly group supervision, and then I have supervision with my immediate supervisor every 2 weeks.
Okay. And are any of those licensed in the community?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions for licensee? Okay, we'll now move to the deliberation. We ask that you not interrupt at this time. And we have Ms. Knapp, your meeting.
Well, and for, you know, making sure it's brief, I think, it, you know, similar concerns as to what we talked about with Mr. Johnson's case. We really, really mirror each other. Obviously, both folks are working together. So the violations are
similar. I think my opinion is similar, but I'd like to hear what everybody else thinks.
I'm in agreement with you.
So I think we would start out by moving to find all three of the violations. I think we can group them together based on that. Sounds reasonable.
Oh, you got to read it, though. It starts on 29.
ARS 3232516D, ARS 3232516II, as it relates to 3286, and ARS 3232516K. Bailey, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
I think the recommendation would be the same, obviously, given the process that we worked through earlier within the meeting. When we're looking, everything is virtually identical. So it seems fair and reasonable, and that we would do the same thing for this license.
And just to put the record on, it's a new licensee from out of state, same situation, just for record.
So for the record, I'll go ahead and read what we did previously. We'd be offering a consent agreement for 24 months. There would be a state suspension. She would be required to get weekly clinical supervision, which would focus on rules and statutes, conflict of interest, documentation, marketing self, termination of services, and boundaries. She also would be required to get 3 CEUs with the board renewal tutorial, as well as a 3-credit graduate level course in behavioral health. She also would have a practice restriction where she could not engage in supervised private practice. And if not signed, she'd be invited to a formal interview, and if not accepted, remanded to a formal hearing. That is final.
Second, Trotter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Roll call, please.
Kimberly Bailey?
Aye.
Robert Charles? Mary Coonrod?
Aye.
Cedric Davis?
Aye.
Pauline Knapp?
Aye.
Megan Kramer?
Aye.
Adelaide Sameek?
Aye.
Mark Shen?
Aye.
Antoine Trotter?
Aye.
And I did, if I may, real quickly, it reminded me that a motion, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time to do it, with it to open an investigation for the supervisor on the Johnson, I believe the last name.
Well, we can, yes, Cox Passway.
Yes, it was P. Cox.
So that was the clinical supervisor that was aware of, we believe was aware of
the website.
But what was being done. So we would open up a complaint, and then board staff would investigate that and bring it back before you.
Do we need a second for that or no? Do we need a vote?
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I would motion we open that.
Second, Trotter. If...
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you. All right. So we are on number 9, applications for licensure and educational programs. Ms. Zavala, do you have numbers for new licenses?
Yes. Since our last meeting, we've issued 277 licenses.
And we'll move to denials, please.
The Counseling Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications of the following individuals and recommends their denial for licensure. 2 applications based on a failure to pass the required examination, 3 applications based on a failure to take the required examination. Full denials is 5.
Bailey, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The Marriage and Family Therapy Academic Review Committee has reviewed the applications for the following 2 individuals and recommends their denial for licensure based on a failure to pass the required exam.
Do we have motion?
Knapp, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Social Work Academic Review Committee has reviewed applications for 27 individuals whose applications are proposed for denial at this time. Applications based on a failure to pass the required examination. patients based on a failure to take the required examination, 16, for a total of 27, and I move it.
Haley, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. And one more?
Do we cover all of them?
Substance abuse?
Substance abuse?
Thank you.
Substance Abuse Academic Review Committee has reviewed the application of the following individual and recommends denial for licensure based on a failure to pass the required examination. One denial, and I move it.
Haley, second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Do we move to number 11?
Madam Chair, we are not in receipt of the financials for July or August, so we will need to table those matters.
Okay, so financials for July and August are tabled for now. And number 12, Ms. Sutherland.
We want to go back up to 10.
Did I miss 10?
Mm-hmm. Your report. The investigative reports.
Oh, there it is. Sorry. Thank you, Ms. Zavala. I just wanted to make a comment and acknowledge the work that our investigators do, which month after month, you know, we are all reminded of the amazing first number of hours that they put into each case. Did you guys are here? All right. Well, thank you all. It's a lot of hours. I can understand the way that you organize things is extremely helpful. The detail is amazing. And, you know, every month when I start reading, I may have a question and I tell myself, keep reading because the answer is there. And month after month, it has been proven that way. So I just really wanted to acknowledge all of you and the manager and Ms. Zavala and everybody in the staff, because it makes our job a lot more, not easy, but clearer. So thank you. Anybody else has any comments? So we'll welcome that.
Yes, commitment to attention to detail.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, Ms. Zavala, for not making me forget this item. And we move to 11. And okay, we have taken care of that. Number 12, then. Ms. Zavala?
Yes, in going to number 12, I think we can just take them as they come. We'll start off with an update on the portal, and we'll have Yadu.
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. The portal is going relatively well as far as the launch. We continue to encounter some bugs here and there. Fortunately, they're not primarily functionality bugs. So that's the good news. We did have some login issues. There were a substantial amount of login issues, and we took it back to our vendor literally the day that it started happening. They assured us that it was user error. We kept pushing back about it because there's no way that this many people can have user error, even though we have 17,000 licensees. Long story short, last Friday, they did in fact find a bug, and they have fixed it. Mm-hmm. So that has caused the volume of calls and emails to go down tremendously. We are overall very thankful for. It did, of course, cause some of our staff members, including myself, some heartache, and of course the licensees. I know it's been rough, and of course we apologize for that, but it has been fixed. At this point, we would recommend for all of the licensees listening in and applicants, please try to log in. So if there are any other bugs floating around out there, we can get those fixed. I think we did have a report run, and there were only about 30% of our licensees that have attempted to log in. I'm sure that's gone up since we ran the numbers. So even though that's thousands, it's certainly not everyone. So please log in if you can. Should I go ahead and go on to?
No, because you know I have to say something.
Oh.
So to piggyback on what Erin said, what she's saying is a little bit of an understatement of kind of what has transpired. We had staff working nights and weekends. I know personally I was on not doing anything with the portal at 11:30 at night and started instant messaging one of our other staff that was online trying to answer emails. So it's been difficult. And I think another thing that's important to say on the record is that I will be meeting with the CEO on Monday in person to discuss why that happened for 5 weeks. So
not like lifetime.
Yeah. So yeah. Here we are today. It's much better now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the diligence.
Yes. Yes. And we all came back to work after that. That's and we're still smiling.
Mm-hmm. We are. On record, at least.
Let's see. So B update. Wait. On the budget, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Budget. Yes. This is really good news. We have submitted our budget as of, well, before September 1st, and that will be for FY25, which will begin July 1st. So you have that actually uploaded into the portal, hopefully. It's a lot of information, but it is there for your review. One of the things that I wanted to point out within that submission is it's called a funding issue, or in other words, a funding request, and we're requesting 7 new employees. So 4 of those employees would be with our credentialing team. 3 of those employees would go to the investigative team. It may sound like a lot. However, the numbers included in that report speak for themselves. With our staffing levels now, there's just no way that we're going to be able to meet the demand of the volume that's coming through our desks. And it really kind of starts with applications. You can see, I believe it's on slide 31, our applications have increased 89% since FY18. A lot. And with that increase, that means it impacts the number of licensees and those renewals that have to be processed. And then, unfortunately, that increases the numbers of complaints and investigations. So we're busy. I mentioned currently we have close to 17,000 licensees. And on average, that's increased 9% each year. And not only is that keeping, as I mentioned, our credentialing team busy, but that keeps our investigative team busy. You can see on those graphs that since FY18, the complaints have increased 97%. So they've, in essence, doubled in 5 years. And the background investigations are also right around there at 101%. So it's a lot. It's a lot. So with that request, yes, it's 7 people, but something to keep in mind is our revenue also increases along with those applications and licensees. So you can see also on one of those graphs that we do have enough revenue to support the request, meaning the money that we're requesting is coming out of our bank account. It's our money. We're not requesting for any additional funds. So as I mentioned, the numbers speak for themselves. Hopefully in about 6 months, we're preparing to bring other people on board. We just have to find out where to put them. And hopefully that's our biggest concern. But we really do need this to take place, or we need these people in order to not continue to keep getting behind. So I think that was the big highlight in the budget request. I'm sure Ms. Zavala wants to add something.
Well, first and foremost, I want to give Ms. Yabu the kudos, because she's the one that completed the budget to its totality of it. So, and it was very, very, very well done. And for anybody that's listening, because it's been brought to my attention, we have a lot of people that listen every month. That budget is, to be transparent, it's on our board's website that you can review. And it's also been sent, which we normally don't, but I sent it personally over to the governor's office to ask for help, so that we can get those individuals, because we are going to consistently be where we don't want to be if we can't get help to keep up with applications and complaints. And we're here to protect the public, but we're not just here to protect the public. We're here to make sure that people that just graduated or want to move up to the independent level can, and we have staff to approve that. So any help that we can get on the outside to push that, to make that happen is pretty huge.
And then the next thing would, oh, yes, that's
speak for themselves, the numbers. Yep. Okay, the last one. Oh, the audio.
Prefer to table this one.
Yeah. We have new microphones.
Just address it now and be done.
No, I mean, at least all of the equipment is here, so that's, and it's installed, but obviously you are witnessing that we need to make some tweaks to the system. I wish I knew how, but we have to rely on our vendor to come in and do that. But hopefully next month we'll have more sensitive microphones. The audio recording will be working, and along with the video equipment as well. But at least the good news is it's here, and that was the biggest delay factor in the whole process. That's all I got. Next, Madam Chair, D, this was something we wanted to put on for a future agenda item in regards to the board's position on writing disability letters, but I've asked for the board chair that we table this because Ms. DeBratz is not here, and I think that her feedback that she's given over the last couple of months has been very important for that to be included. The next one would be E, discussion regarding the Department of Health Services Task Force. There's not very many things in life that get me super excited these days, but being on this task force is super exciting. So basically, and Ms. Knapp will probably be able to do a better job because she's also on this task force as an access employee, not as a board member. But basically, this all came down to after all of the fraud that occurred with access. And so they're wanting to develop a way where our board has some authority over different types of complaints that they may receive. Right now, it's like, well, that's DHS's issue because we don't have authority to do a lot of things because our rules or statutes don't allow that. So we have a standing monthly meeting where OIG, Access, Department of Health Services, the Human Service Council, trying to develop a plan on what we need to do in statute or in rules so that we can work better together. And so I'm pretty excited about that. You know, we're still gonna have BHTs, we're still gonna have people unlicensed providing psychotherapy, but I think we're gonna have the ability to discipline BHPs who are licensed and aren't providing the appropriate services so that clients are getting the care that they need. And Ms. Knapp, do you wanna add to that discussion?
Yeah, I think it's just important, you know, to kind of note also that as part of that, when you're talking about the BHTs and BHPPs, those will continue to exist within the system as a whole under the umbrella. But we are looking at every piece of that, right? So even refining what services are provided, what is okay, how do those people get supervised when they are providing it to make sure that members, clients, whatever you would like to call the humans that we're working with, are getting that best care and service possible. So it is a collaborative effort, and then we are doing our very best to make sure that that is the number one priority, is making sure that the people of Arizona are getting good care.
And I'm not sure who's more excited, me or Ms. Knapp.
It's true. I'm so excited. No. I'm trying to be measured.
The next is update on board staffs present at the annual Southwestern Schools for Behavioral Health Studies annual conference in Tucson. I did have board staff upload the evaluation that came back from one of the four different presentations that I presented on. But for those of you that have been around, you're going to hear me say this is one of my favorite conferences. And it's one of my favorite conferences because it's in Arizona and because there's probably 500 of our licensees that are there. So a way to get that message out, the education that we do is huge. Been doing it for years. So what it is one night I do a presentation with Baron Akins on behavioral health ethics as well as the board. And that's what that evaluation for. I think we're at 111% capacity. There appeared to be like hundreds in the audience. But more importantly than that, the other thing is at no cost to the board, they allow us to have a table. Which basically means we get a nice little tablecloth and we get to sit there and answer questions as people come up. This year it was exciting. We were planning on bringing a whole bunch of board staff down just to get their feet wet and to get educated and have an opportunity. But then the portal came. And so three of our staff that had planned to go down, unfortunately, we kind of had to stop them from going down because we had login issues. But Mr. Carver was able to come down and spend a couple of days at the booth. And, you know, I think that I hope that the takeaway is that we're there and we're there to support our licensees. We're there to educate them. So it was really a good one. And in addition to that, because I keep going down, I also did a clinical supervision, assisted with the clinical supervision training the day before the conference started, Saturday, and then Sunday, and then another one on Monday. And we continue to get good feedback just that the board is there. And so I'm pretty excited. If you haven't taken an opportunity to look at the evaluation, I think the main comments are that they just appreciate the board being there. So thank you. The next one is, this is actually an action vote, review consideration and action regarding a board member's fully funded attendance at the Association of Social Work Boards Delegate Assembly. So this is ASWB. I know Mr. Davis has attended this a number of times in the past. Basically, ASWB is the it's the national association that holds the, I mean, they do a lot of things. But a lot of people remember them because they're the ones that they do the testing for our social workers. And so they have a delegate assembly that where they talk about the Social Model Act and their rules and statutes for their board. And every year they allocate one fund for a member of the board or staff to go to that assembly to participate in that. Ms. Hennigan, who's not here today, did reach out to me and said that she would very much like to be considered to go. As a board administrator, I would recommend that the board members consider sending her. Two reasons. This isn't a conference where I could say it affects all four disciplines. It's truly a social work conference where they talk about their bylaws and all that. And then secondly, Mr. Davis has gone a number of times. Ms. Hennigan's never gone. So I would like the board members to consider doing a vote so that Ms. Hennigan can attend that in November.
And Davis moves it. Second,
Trotter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved.
All right. Next, I many of you know, and I hesitated putting it on the agenda, and I decided I'm going to put it on the agenda. Discussion regarding the Glenda McDonald Board Administrator Award. I was awarded that. It's kind of an honor. So they have, there's a fully funded ticket for me to go to Memphis where I get that award in November. So just wanted to share that. Pretty excited. ASWB is on here a lot. And then the next one is, this is also an action vote, and information has been uploaded to your portal on this as well. But in addition to that, a whole separate thing, I've been nominated, which means there's other people there, nominated to be on their board of directors position to serve on the Association of Social Work Boards. And so I have preliminary accepted with the board's approval. And then that would mean that I would go to that conference and have to do a speech and win and all that kind of exciting stuff. But I am asking the board's permission for me to do that. And then to add to that, I will say as of June, I was off all national committees. So I think I have space.
Yeah. Davis moves.
Trotter second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Thanks for always keeping our good profile out there, Toby.
Right.
He does this on top of the regular.
Next is the discussion regarding boundary violation pursuant to ARS 3232-5116B and the impact on clients. So for those of you in the public that don't know, 16B is having a sexual relationship with a current client or a former client. And I probably could have done a better job at this, members, and I apologize for that, but I will tell you it's going to go on the agenda next month because it's my mission to make sure that every board member has an opportunity to have this discussion, and I think 2 months in a row would be appropriate. This entails, based on the video that was uploaded to the member portal, if you haven't watched it, please don't watch it now because the words that are said by a client that was had a sexual relationship with one of our former clients is on there. Licensee. And then we don't need to talk about that case, but that licensee no longer has a license and has clearly impacted the client who he had a sexual relationship with 4 years later. And it's very impactful. I know I had to process it many times. I sent it to my staff. Even though I think it was hard to see and it was hard to watch, it's important to remember why we're here. But I also think it's important to remember why our board has made a very clear decision based on our law that somebody that has sex with their client is not going to keep their license and is not going to be able to get a license. And I think that that's kind of the importance of that, because all we see and hear when people have sexual relationships with clients is one thing. We don't see what happens to them 4 years later. And in addition to that, based on the threat to the licensee, it was reported to law enforcement. So, and again, we're going to have the discussion again next month. And if you haven't watched it, watch it in private, because it's pretty moving, and probably moving more for some people than it could be for others. Next is K. We are going to have to table that, but just briefly, it will be an action vote. After our July 31st meeting, there was an ombudsman complaint in regards to an open meeting law violation. And the reason for that open meeting violation was that this was all in regards to the emergency meeting that we had in regards to GERC. And I was working with the governor's office Friday and Saturday. Sunday, we had to have a meeting. We posted it on the website. I did not drive down 30 miles to post it on the door. So. Somehow somebody figured that out. They filed a complaint, but we're going to have to table it because the members that were on this meeting, at this meeting, were not present today. So we'll put it on for next time.
And then we go to item number 11, request for extension of inactive status, review, consideration, and action. Ms. 13. I have new glasses, but I don't think that's the excuse, because when I looked again, it does say 13. Ms. Zavala?
13A, so this is for a request for an extension of inactive status. This is for Maria Carmen Preciado. Just a reminder to board members, the first time somebody requests an extension, board staff can do it, and it doesn't have to be for any reason. The second time, by statute, it has to be for beyond licensee's control, medical, or military. In this particular case, I'm not sharing information confidentially. It's in regards to medical. It appears that they do meet those requirements, but we do need a vote on that.
Trotter, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. It's approved.
And then next, Holly Wilcom also has requested an inactive status extension, and again, it is medical.
So moved. Megan.
Bailey, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Number 15, call for public comment. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board may limit those persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number and to any given public matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 5 minutes to do so pursuant to ARS 3841431.01H. The board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. Action on public comment that are not listed on the agenda will be limited to directing staff to study the matter or to schedule the matter for future discussion at a later date. Go ahead. Can you speak onto the microphone, like, really close, because today...
Better?
Pretend you're karaoke.
Yeah?
Okay.
It's a tough one today. I apologize. My name is Helena Brooke. I'm a licensee. As some of you know, there has been a long-standing... And I apologize for speaking too fast. As some of you know, there has been a long-standing issue of unprofessionalism within social media spaces, one in particular that experienced an especially robust disaster within the last month. As often happens with complicated issues that are reduced to text clips, people got hurt, people's identities and perspectives were mocked and invalidated. Ethical and political posturing were used in strategy to amplify pain and isolation, especially of folks who are on the margins of marginalized communities. And in this particular situation, whole portions of this saga and of discourse and unrelated discourses were erased or partially curated to extend the conflict. There were themes of racism, colorism, anti-Semitism, identity policing, and posturing. Notable to this situation, it spilled out of social media, hopping boundaries and entering the personal space and decimating the professionalism and dignity of our community. People were threatened, intimidated, humiliated, and had their professional relationships violated. And many have had to expend extensive resources, time, and emotional energy to heal and cope so client care and professional wellness could remain solid. Thankfully, life blooms out of storms and when we can find enough sunlight. One of the reasons I wanted to come today and address you is because with all of the negativity in the public discourse and in the shadows about what happened and the people involved, there's a missing piece to the story that I hope will warm your heart and root you with hope the same way it has for me and the coalition I facilitate and the greater community that has been connecting over it. There have been deep process conversations about layers and intersections of identity, the missing pieces of the dominant multicultural discourse, ethics, boundaries, and the courage and need for direct communication between colleagues. Some are crafting CE courses. Others are applying the trauma theory and trainings they've taken to support clients and using this wisdom in navigating the complexity themselves and with peers in need. One-on-one and group consultations have been alive with tough conversations. And Aaron, is that it? Okay. All right. One-on-one and group consultations have been alive with tough conversations, inspiration, and deepening perspective on how to show up for each other and our clients whose nuanced identities, demographics, unmet needs, fear, and prior traumas are in need of more thoughtful support. I'm usually here advocating for policies on behalf of other people than myself. And today I'm doing something brave, vulnerable, uncomfortable, a little embarrassing, briefly to illustrate the situation. I've been stalked and harassed, including but not limited to someone contacting a legislator in the hopes of what sounded like a cancellation, someone shaking down a non-clinician who worked for me, correspondence to multiple people in perceived positions of authority in our professional community under the guise of ethical consultation to advance gossip, mistruths, curated snippets, and humiliation. These conversations, from what I've been told, have ridden under the guise of anti-racism and ethics consultation with people who have a perceived position of power and prominence in our professional community, not limited to employees of the BBHE, people in service positions in our profession, and even, as I found out 48 hours ago, my own clinical supervisor. Yes, someone even called my clinical supervisor, the content of which she shared was horrifying, but I won't go into out of respect for the tenuous position it put her in for the weeks she grappled with it before coming to me to discuss. The hardest part has been that my outreach to have direct peer-to-peer discussion per all three codes of ethics and general best practices have been denied and replaced with conversations about me, which have been both misrepresentative and well beyond the scope of the current situation. Okay, I'm going to wrap up. As it stands now, my understanding over the past few years is that the board doesn't have policies or positions on some of these things and doesn't consider their regulation to the same extent that as client harm and risk to clients, appropriately so. I would posit that these issues, which impact the professional community and set the tone for work environment, ethical culture, and all our abilities to connect and serve our community, do also impact client care and safety. I'm humbly asking you to please consider putting one or hopefully both of these items on a future agenda. One, professional stewardship and ethics within and surrounding social media and other non-clinical settings and gathering spaces and discourses. And two, the appropriate use and avoidance of abuse of ethical consultation and board consultation. These practices are only to be used for the furtherance of clinical ethics and excellence and not as a vehicle for harassment, humiliation, gossip, and intimidation. I know it can be scary to open a door to what we know might be messy on the other side, but please, please consider that asking that these items be put on an agenda for a future meeting does not oblige you to any awkwardness. It just gives you the chance to consider what, if anything, might be done, from setting a tone to crafting guidelines to even memorializing a position that really shouldn't be so controversial. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else? Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. We don't have anybody else from the public. I missed number 14. Is this the time where we?
I would like to talk about
public future agenda.
I'm not sure with the, like, everything that happened with the rulemaking, if there's a process for when we go back into rulemaking, but I would like to put on the agenda just to kind of discuss how that will work moving forward, and then also looking at the adoptions of standards surrounding supervision, standards of people not licensed through the board. That makes sense. Standards for our licensees in reference to that.
Okay, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. And number 16, the next regular meeting is scheduled for Friday, October 13, 2023 at 9 a.m. And this meeting is adjourned.
At this point, Ms. Knapp is the only one that's not going to be here for October. Do we have a confirmation from that?
Mm-hmm. Want anything else?
You need a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Oh, second, Trotter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The meeting is adjourned at 1:39 p.m.